AM 1150, KNRC, Englewood, Denver. Enid Goldstein is straight ahead. It's 12 o'clock.
Good afternoon. Mostly cloudy, 27 degrees. I'm Tim McLaughlin. This report brought to you by Electronics Boutique. The cold temperatures and Denver's homelessness crisis combined last night to take the life of a 55-year-old homeless man who froze to death in Civic Center Park. All the man had to shield him from the 5-degree temperatures was a single blanket. The Colorado Coalition for the Homeless has renewed its call to Mayor John Hickenlooper to immediately open the Castro Human Services Building. John Parvensky, president of the Colorado Coalition for the Homeless, says he really hopes the city of Denver will make the human services building available to the homeless.
Clearly, we need to do something on an emergency basis to make sure that people don't freeze to death on the streets of Denver this winter. And the human services building provides a great option to at least use the lobby space to house about 100 people who otherwise would be living on the streets.
The city has been debating whether to make that facility at 1300 Federal open as a temporary shelter. The man who allegedly offered to kill the woman who claims basketball star Kobe Bryant raped her is due for a preliminary hearing in Los Angeles today. Prosecutors say Patrick Graber was arrested following a sting operation in which he agreed to carry out an attack on Bryant's accuser for $1 million. Graber's attorney says his client simply wrote fan mail offering to solve Bryant's problem. Two 18-year-olds decided that they'd stayed long enough at a Pueblo detention center. They escaped last night from the Colorado Mental Health Institute but were captured this morning. The State Department of Corrections isn't saying just where they were found or whether they face additional charges. Both Adam Hillen and Ray Chavez were serving 4-year sentences, Hillen for motor vehicle theft, Chavez for burglary. While there's no snow falling from the sky today, there are still icy streets and sidewalks to deal with. Julia Jaco with the Denver Community Planning and Development Department reminds us of the laws about removing ice and snow from sidewalks.
Businesses are required to shovel their sidewalks 4 hours after the stop of a snowfall. Residential properties that get a lot less pedestrian use, they're required to shovel their walkways 24 hours after the stop of a snowstorm.
Jaco says the city has inspection teams on the lookout for slippery sidewalks, and if they find one, they issue a warning. Thus far, says Jaco, everyone who's gotten a warning has complied. President Bush is defending the controversial Pentagon decision to bar Germany, France, and Russia from bidding on lucrative contracts to rebuild Iraq. Those three nations oppose the U.S.-led war against Iraq.
And the expenditure of U.S. dollars will reflect the fact that U.S. troops and other troops risk their life.
Bush defended the U.S. move after a cabinet meeting at the White House. At issue is $18.6 billion in U.S. dollars to rebuild Iraq. The contracts flap has opened a new transatlantic rift and threatens efforts to soothe hard feelings after the U.S. bypassed U.N. consent and invaded Iraq. A psychiatrist who claims accused D.C. area sniper Lee Boyd Malvo was insane at the time of the October 2002 shooting spree has taken the stand in the 18-year-old's capital murder trial. Under cross-examination, Dr. Neil Bloomberg testified that Malvo meets Virginia's criteria for insanity, meaning that he did not know right from wrong and he couldn't control his impulses to commit murder. Malvo's defense team is hoping for a verdict of not guilty by reason of insanity. About 150 Minnesota National Guard soldiers will meet later today to get ready for tomorrow's search for missing University of North Dakota student Drew Shanine. Colonel Danny Shields says personnel will have Humvees and a helicopter to assist them.
Our intent is to conduct a very, very thorough search in the area that, working with Polk County Sheriff's Office, in the area that they've specified for us as our responsibility.
Minnesota Governor Tim Pawlenty and North Dakota Governor John Hoeven both called out National Guard troops to assist in the search. Shadeen has been missing since the Saturday before Thanksgiving. More and more Americans are finding themselves standing in line for first-time jobless benefits in the run-up to the major winter holidays. The Labor Department reports first-time jobless claims rose by 13,000 to 378,000 last week. That's the opposite direction economists had predicted the claims would go in. Meanwhile, despite the increased number of people signing up for unemployment, retail sales actually on the rise. According to the Commerce Department, sales surged nearly a full percentage point last month. In sports, the Colorado Avalanche head into Vancouver tonight to play the Canucks. Two teams haven't played each other since last season. Denver Broncos fullback Mike Anderson is back with the team after serving a 4-game suspension for a violation of the NFL substance abuse policy. Anderson had tested positive for marijuana back in November. Here's a holiday tip from EB Games. Trade in your used video games for huge discounts on all the hottest new releases. Only at EB Games, an electronics boutique where we take games seriously. Traffic and your exclusive Weather Channel forecast are up next. KNRC News Time is 12:05.
Jim Condor here, talking with Bev Rouleau from International Optique. Bev, fashion eyewear the best in the city, and now a sale. Bev, what's up with that?
Jim, International Optique is having our annual sale now through January 15th, and it's a blowout.
I know the details. If you purchase prescription frames and lenses at International Optique at Tamarack Square or International Optique at University and Orchard, you receive a 25% discount.
It's a family affair at International Optique. Just bring your family and friends. Everyone receives 25% off their new frame and lenses.
And don't forget to use your Flex dollars while saving money. If you run out of time to use your Flex dollars, come in for a gift certificate to be used later.
Jim, the excitement about International Optique is that we carry frames with a little attitude or a lot of attitude. Either way, let our staff make sure you walk out looking beyond fabulous.
For the best in eyewear in Denver, join International Optique at Tamarack Square or International Optique at University in Orchard now through January 15th for their spectacular 25% off prescription frame and lens sale. It's not what you know, it's who you know, and we know International Optique.
KNRC News Time is 12:06. Time to go to Darren Copeland in the KNRC Traffic Center.
This traffic report is brought to you by the 17 John Elway Showroom. Trying to clean up a couple accidents around the metro area. The worst of it's going to be an injury accident, Colfax and Spear. Northbound I-25 at Downing, we had a bit of a problem that was tying up the Narrows. And Ohio and University have an accident that should be out of there as well. Do you want out of high car payments? Then the John Elway Showrooms want to swap cars with you. You could end up making lower payments than you have now. Swap cars and let John Elway take your old car and lower your monthly payments. I'm Darren Copeland with your KNRC traffic.
I'm Colleen Swales with a KNRC forecast from the Weather Channel. Becoming mostly cloudy for the rest of the afternoon. The high today only near 36. Now we're going to drop down to 15 tonight under a mostly cloudy sky. And we'll find a few morning flurries with some clouds on Friday. The afternoon turning partly cloudy with a high near 30. Warming it up on Saturday, partly cloudy and breezy with a high near 40. For the Weather Channel, I'm Colleen Swales on AM 1150 KNRC.
It's mostly cloudy, 28 degrees. KNRC News Time is 12:07. I'm Tim McLaughlin. Our next news at 12:35 or when it breaks on AM 1150 KNRC.
Now, the Enid Goldstein Show on AM 1150 KNRC.
12:07, 7 minutes after 12 o'clock. Welcome to the Thursday edition of Enid Live. I'm yours until 3 o'clock, and today we have a pretty stellar guest, at least I'm a great fan of his. Paul Krugman will be joining us in the 2 o'clock hour. He is a New York Times columnist by training and economist. He teaches at Princeton. He's been shortlisted reportedly for a number of top economic prizes, including the Nobel Prize, and some of his recent articles on economic issues have appeared in publications such as Foreign Affairs, Harvard Business Review, Scientific American, and other journals. He's probably written or contributed to about 18 different books, some of them very abstruse academic treatises. Paul Krugman from the New York Times will be joining us in the 2 o'clock hour. Tomorrow we're going to be live from the Denver Press Club, and it is the holiday issue, and we've got tons of guests. Suzanne Brown is going to be joining us. She's a style and fashion editor for the Denver Post. Our own style twins, Judy Schwartz and Evelinda Ehrman, are going to be joining us, and they do a column for the Rocky Mountain News. Mark Schulgold, who is the classical music editor for the Rocky, going to talk about his top 10 favorite, least favorite things about the Nutcracker. He's also going to talk about Colorado Symphony's current production at the Paramount, which he planned in part because of the venue. We've got actors. We've got writers for the Post Lifestyle section talking about how men and women view the holidays differently, what to get, how much to tip, just all kinds of wonderful stuff. So we're going to be joined by a lot of people, a whole roster of people from both newspapers and other areas of life for the special holiday edition of Enid Live, coming to you from the Denver Press Club live tomorrow. You don't have to be a member. Stop by if you want. Have lunch at the Press Club, and we would love to have you join us. And the Press Club is great. They have great events. You don't have to be a member to go to a lot of their events. They're going to have their big book sale coming up on this coming Friday, tomorrow night, actually, starting at 6 o'clock if you're a member. And I think if you're not a member, you have to wait until Saturday morning. Also, on the 18th of December, put this on your calendar. The public is invited to attend a breakfast on Deadline, and I'll be the featured speaker, and Channel 8 there will be taping, and it will be rebroadcast in January. Bruce Goldberg of the Denver Business Journal is going to serve as a moderator and an interviewer. So Thursday, December 18, 9 o'clock in the morning at the Denver Press Club, 1330 Glen Arm, right across from the DAC, Denver Athletic Club. If you're a member, only $10. If you're not, 12 only, and if you want to make reservations, call 303-571-5260. 303-571-5260. Next week, Wednesday at 1 o'clock, back by popular demand, Tell It to Tim. 1 o'clock, put it on your calendars. Anything you like about KNRC, anything you hate about KNRC, anything you think KNRC ought to be doing or not doing, this is your chance to voice it, whatever you may want to say about KCUV, but really we're going to probably talk more about KNRC because, hey, that's where we are. Tim Brown is our CEO, and it's very courageous of him to do this Tell It to Tim. It's probably the holiday version of Tell It to Tim. Wednesday, 1 o'clock in the afternoon. Tell It to Tim. So he is fearless. He's going to take your phone calls. And we know at KNRC we've got a really passionate listenership, people who have very strong ideas one way or the other. So we want to hear from you, and I think you're not going to be holding back. Anyway, that's Wednesday, 1 o'clock in the afternoon. I just got this very nice email from Wendy, who happens to be related to Jordan Lyles. What a coincidence. She's talking about volunteering, and she said, I heard you might be doing a show on community service, and I wanted to make sure that you knew of three places where she volunteers, and the need for more volunteers is great. So here is where Wendy Lyles is volunteering. Family Homestead is a homeless shelter with transitional housing. She said, right now we are in the middle of our Adopt a Family program, which provides holiday gift giving to our families. With this program, when you adopt a family, parents' gifts are wrapped, children's gifts unwrapped, so that the parents may wrap them with the wrap that we provide. And then she says, Judy's House is Brian Grease's home for grieving children and their families. This is a free service located at 1600 St. Paul, offering children and families as young as three to come and meet other families who are experiencing a similar loss. Finally, the Denver Dumb Friends League, where we are always in need of volunteers, from dog walkers to you name it, she said, so she would enjoy offering us a private tour at any time. Anyway, she likes listening to the show. And thank you, Wendy Lyles, for talking about volunteering. And she's volunteering at three places. Let me tell you something. They've done a study. People who volunteer live longer. I don't know why that is. Is it because you're a certain kind of person to begin with, that you would be a type of person predisposed to volunteering? Or is it that in volunteering, you're giving more, your life has additional meaning, you feel like you're doing something really useful for somebody, and somehow that really makes you feel better about yourself to the extent that you tend to live longer. In any event, for whatever the reasons may be, people who volunteer tend to live longer than people who don't. So I'm offering that to you this holiday season as an extra incentive for volunteering. Do you remember when you were in school, the teacher or your parents or somebody could control you, not only by giving you the dirty look, the look, but by warning you that anything you did would go on your permanent record? Remember that? It would go on your permanent record? Where's your permanent record now? Where do they have that? Do they have that on microfilm someplace? Somebody was talking about that, so that I think we're all walking around with this permanent record etched in our psyches. Or, you know, if God forbid you do something wrong at work, it goes in your file. Well, then what? Where is that? Where's your file? Where's your permanent record from school? Do they have that in some big warehouse in Alabama? I want to know about this. But it has struck terror into the hearts of generations of children. And one of the things that we have talked about here, advertising everywhere, this is part of my campaign to get In God We Trust off the money and to replace that motto with one that is far more truthful. And our new national motto should be, what's in it for me? Because that is exactly what we have become too often. In any event, I have shared with you the grisly information that there is technology available now to burn advertising messages into the eggshells. You know, you go into a grocery store and you walk in, and there not only is there advertising now on the grocery carts, but there's advertising on the floor. Advertisers buy tiles on the floor of the grocery store, and you see ads. You hear ads over the PA in the grocery store. There are ads all over the place on the, what are called the shelf talkers, those little strips on the shelves that are offering you coupons off or ads or, you know, stuff like that. Well, we've known for a long time that you could put ads on, oh, you can burn them into hot dog casings too, by the way. Oh, here's where I think they're going next. Sides of tampons, condoms, you know, an expanding message, you name it. You're going to have designer tampons. In the next life, that's what they're going to have. Anyway, America West, they're doing it. The technology has been available. Now America West, which says it's determined to keep its fares low, or are they determined to add to the bottom line, they are now going to launch tray table ads. So here you are, the most captive of audience, breathing in those old stale cooties, and don't ever drink the water out of the fountain in a plane, because the Wall Street Journal did a whole laboratory analysis and you don't want to know what's in there. Those maggots are coexisting so nicely and sweetly and cozily with the E. coli bacteria. Don't even do it. And when they come down the aisle with the cart, and they're going to give you water from a bottled water container that's already been opened, do not drink it. Peter Greenberg, who is a travel editor for NBC News, and I knew him in San Francisco. I once actually took a class from him. I had him on as a guest not long ago. And he says, you know, when they come down the aisle with those carts, the water bottles that are open, don't drink out of those either, because very often they just fill them from the water drinking fountain that I'm just telling you about that you don't want to drink out of, because they don't ever hardly clean the containers that are on board for the water. So don't always either take the bottled water that has not been opened on the plane or bring your own. That's the way to do it. So America West has launched tray table ads. You're sitting there. You're trying not to notice that you've got about no leg room whatsoever, that even if you're a tiny and svelte person like moi, the radio goddess, you still don't have enough room to roll around in your seat. You're scrunched in on either side by two massive human beings who are kind of porcomorphs. And now you've got to look at advertising on your tray table that is not serving you any food. Why do they still have the tray tables? Because you're not getting any food on a lot of these flights now. Actually, on a lot of these flights, I long thought you would be better off with a picture of the food than what they really serve, but that's my take on it. Democrats trying to pull themselves together, strategy in the 7th. I actually ran into Mike Feely, who lost by this much, by just a hair, to Bob Opre in the 7th. And now that the district is going back to where it was before, in terms of the boundaries of it, because of the court case, I asked him, are you going to run again? He said, no, he's had it this time. He now has a child and not going to do that. So the Democrats are trying to avoid a huge deal, and they're mulling their strategy in the 7th. They want to avoid a primary fight, and they want to unify behind one candidate so they can unseat Bob Beaupre. Here we have Abercrombie and Fitch, something that we have been talking about, their catalog, which is pretty out there, I think. I haven't actually seen the catalog, but the descriptions of it, pretty out there. Abercrombie and Fitch, as you may remember, was one of the most staid and waspy of stores. And I used to kid that I had a friend who was such a huge consumer that he once, at one time or another, owned everything that was ever sold on the first floor at Abercrombie and Fitch, which was really, it was really old line waspy. Well, somehow it transformed itself. I don't know whether they faced bankruptcy, reorganization, or reorganization under what chapter, something or other, 11. But in any event, somewhere along the line, they morphed into a very hot, edgy company targeting teens and preteens with very edgy kinds of catalogs. They have announced that Abercrombie & Fitch announces it will discontinue its quarterly magazine. This is the one that you bought. This is the one that conservatives targeted for removal at Christmas because allegedly it touted the virtues of oral sex and who knows what else. Abercrombie & Fitch said that they pulled it from their shelves because they were really introducing a new perfume and they needed the space for the perfume, which doesn't sound like much of an explanation. Anyway, Abercrombie & Fitch going to discontinue its quarterly magazine. This is the power. I have not seen that at a catalog. You can tell me, those of you who have seen it, whether it's as raunchy as a lot of these conservatives are alleging. But the power of the organized protest, the power of a calling tree, the power of getting everybody together to bombard the company and threaten a boycott is massive. And they probably didn't get all that many calls, but they got enough to pay attention. I want to talk about Howard Dean, and getting the endorsement of Al Gore. But first, I've got to share with you today's Borowitz report. Headline, Lieberman's wife endorses Dean. Connecticut senator blindsided by latest defection. In the latest blow to the candidacy of Senator Joseph Lieberman, Mr. Lieberman's wife, Hadassah, today endorsed former governor, Vermont Governor Howard Dean, for president. Mrs. Lieberman used one of her husband's rallies in Concord, New Hampshire, to make her stunning announcement. I would like to introduce the next president of the United States, Mrs. Lieberman said. But unfortunately, Howard Dean is in Iowa today. The crowd audibly gasped as Mrs. Lieberman then launched into a 30-minute endorsement of the Democratic frontrunner, her ashen-faced husband, standing at her side. Mrs. Lieberman stressed that hers was a difficult decision since it meant overlooking her 20-year marriage to the Connecticut senator. But she added, at the end of the day, it was a no-brainer. Regaining his composure after Mrs. Lieberman led the crowd in a chant of, Dean, 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 Senator Lieberman said that while he was disappointed by his wife's decision, it meant that he was no longer obligated to call his in-laws at Hanukkah. But Mr. Lieberman was blindsided yet again later in the day when a coalition representing over 100 of the senator's friends, family, and college roommates issued their own endorsement of Howard Dean. Responding to that announcement, Mr. Lieberman told reporters, "The fact that everybody is deserting me en masse just proves that I'm gaining momentum," adding, "I'm so close to winning this thing. I can taste it." Elsewhere, in a new interview with Rolling Stone magazine, Senator John Kerry, Democrat from Massachusetts, used two four-letter words, one of them being Gore. The Borowitz Report, 303-322-1150. The Republicans have started to demonize Howard Dean. They are saying that he's a rerun of McGovern and he can't possibly win. Other Republican commentators are saying that the Republicans are salivating at the prospect of Howard Dean as a presidential candidate because they think they can really go at him and knock him out immediately. What do you think? 303-382-1150. 303-382-1150. I'm Enid Goldstein. You're listening to the Wednesday edition. Thursday, actually. Wednesday was yesterday. Well, it only feels like Wednesday. The Thursday edition of Enid Live. I'm yours until 3 o'clock right here on AM 1150 KNRC.
Denver's best-kept secret, the only station where you can hear host with all points of view. Hear both sides talk on AM 1150 KNIC.
This holiday season, why not invest in a gift for yourself and your family? Something that will give you safety, comfort, and beauty, all while bringing you savings. I'm talking about doors. The entrance to your house provides security to your family while being the first impression of your home. Don't compromise these while contributing to high utility costs with old doors that let cold air in and warm air out. Call Colorado Door Connection at 303-425-3366 for a free estimate today. And as a gift to you this holiday season, you'll receive a free storm door up to a $200 value when you purchase any entry system with installation valued at $1,200 or more. Colorado Door Connection. Visit their showroom at 9710 West 50th Avenue, just off I-70 at Kipling. Or call 303-425-3366 today. Here's wishing you and yours a very happy, safe, and warm holiday season.
AM 1150 KNRC is proud to continue a Denver broadcast tradition. The State of Colorado, produced in conjunction with the Denver Press Club and Rocky Mountain Reflections. The State of Colorado is where Greg Dobbs hosts a panel of Denver journalists discussing the major stories of the week every Friday morning from 8 to 9:30. It's the most in-depth analysis and perspective on Denver radio. The State of Colorado is brought to you in part by Denver Center Attractions and International Optique. Friday mornings at 8 on AM 1150 KNRC. Enid Goldstein Show continues on AM 1150 KNRC.
1223 on the Thursday edition of Enid Live. I'm yours until 3 o'clock, and I want to talk to you about Howard Dean, and I want to talk to you about whether the Republicans are now beginning to demonize him. They're focusing, Bush's advisors are focusing on Dean as a likely opponent next year. He's way ahead of John Kerry. I mean, the last numbers I saw are like 30 points ahead of him. Maybe that gap is closed somewhat. But now, with the endorsement from Al Gore, Dean is clearly going to be the guy. And it's being reported that there's a lot of heartland momentum for Dean now because of the Gore endorsement. So I'm curious to know whether what the Bush people are doing to demonize Dean is to say that he's very liberal, for one thing, which he is really not. They're saying that he's like McGovern and he can't possibly win. What do you think? How far do you think that's going to go? And what is going to be necessary to make Dean a viable candidate in, say, the heartland? What are we going to have to do? Has anybody seen, by the way, the MoveOn.org ad about President Bush? I've been seeing it running in CNN and the Wolf Blitzer show. It is really powerful. It's Santa came early this year, and then here's Santa Claus sitting by the fireplace, and it's a wish list of everything. The drug companies got what they wanted, and the insurers got what they wanted, and big business got what it wanted. You know, they go down the list, and who was the Santa? George W. Bush. It's just brilliantly done. It's a very good ad. 303-32-1150. Bruce, calling from Boulder. Hi, you're live with Enid.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I love your show.
Thank you, Bruce.
I want to say I desperately want Dean to win, and I do think he's the presumptive nominee at this point. But I'm worried about some of the crackpot things he's been saying about, you know, that Bush knew ahead of time that the Saudis had told the CIA and he couldn't pull out anything.
Actually, I've been reading independent reporting about that Bush, and I'm trying to think where I saw it, and I haven't been able to call it up in what laughingly refers to itself as my memory, but I saw reporting to the extent that Bush did know, and it might have been an op-ed piece that somebody from the Clinton era did, who was a high-ranking national security person, and he said that Bush did get information prior to 9/11, and he was really distressed at getting it, and he let them know that he didn't want to have any more of that kind of information. So I don't think that Dean is off the mark here.
Yeah, but I mean, he specifically said that he had information that the president knew about it from the Saudis. I mean, and he was never able to back it up.
He may be right, but he's got to back it up if he says it.
Yeah, and you remember what everybody ridiculed Bush for, not knowing the name of the Prime Minister of India and all that stuff while he was running?
Right.
And that Dean talked the other day about what he would do with the Soviet Union vis-a-vis Iraq.
He meant Russia.
You know, that's the kind of stuff that makes me wince when I want to support him.
Let me tell you, yeah, but I want to say something. As somebody who has to speak for a living, it's really easy to make those mistakes. He knows that the Soviet Union doesn't exist anymore. He's just got to be more careful because his enemies will seize on every burp that he makes.
Absolutely, yeah.
But you're voting for what?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, what I was going to say is that Bush now gets a free ride on any of those gaps.
Bush has had a free ride the whole way through.
Yeah.
Why are they harder on Dean? Bush, as Bush put it, he's been misunderestimated.
Exactly.
He can't pronounce the name of the state in Nevada. He calls it Nevada.
Now we're extra overestimating him.
And now we're extra overestimating him, and he has gotten a free pass the whole time. So
Absolutely.
Why should everybody be so hard on Howard Dean?
It's just that they will be. That's the thing.
Well, the interesting thing is you know that there's a Dean Bush connection, don't you?
No.
It was one of the grandmothers, whether it was Howard Dean's. Howard Dean comes from an equally WASPy, well-born family as Bush does. And it was either Howard Dean's grandmother who asked Bush's grandmother to be a bridesmaid in her wedding or the other way around. But it was
great.
So this family has known each other for a while.
Maybe they're related.
You know, here's the truth of it, Bruce. We're all related. With all the DNA testing, it turns out that there are about 10 Eves. And I think the original Eves were headquartered in Africa. So here's the story. We're all African Americans.
Well, thanks for taking my
You're
call.
Welcome, Bruce. 303-382-1150. Think about that, boys and girls and buckaroos. We are all African Americans. They've traced the DNA to about 10 Eves. I don't know how many atoms. Well, many atoms, undoubtedly. But there are only about 10 Eves, I recall seeing. And so that means that we're all sort of more connected with each other than we realize. And I think some of those Eves, or many of them, were headquartered in Africa. That was where the home office was. So we're all African Americans. 303-382-1150. Jimmy Carter has said, and this is a bombshell, that the appointment of Georgia Zell Miller to the Senate was a mistake because his fellow ex-governor betrayed all the basic principles that I thought he and I and others shared. It turns out Zell Miller has been so nasty about Democrats, not that he shouldn't be exactly. I wonder if he isn't really a stealth Republican who just called himself a Democrat in order to get himself appointed. But in any event, Jimmy Carter saying that Zell Miller's Senate appointment was, quote, a mistake. 303-382-1150. Earl, calling from Denver. Hi, you're live with Enid.
Hi, Enid. I like your show.
Thank you.
Now, I'm a conservative, you know, because I call in, but I think they're miscalculating wanting Dean to get the nomination because they think they can clobber him. I don't think it'll be that way.
Wait a minute. Do you think that they're saying they can clobber him knowing that he's really a formidable opponent, or do you really think they can clobber him?
I think they really think that they can clobber him. But I don't know, you know, our conversation yesterday, I think that there's two fractions in the country, and it's very well split now. For a conservative like me, the Democratic Party shifted so far to the left, it's not a viable option.
Where have they shifted?
But there's the other half that consider the Republican Party not a viable option, and they won't vote for them. I think the country's split down the middle enough that whoever the Democratic nomination is, there's a chance.
You do? You're going to vote for Bush, though, I take it.
Yeah, I will. But I think that there is that separation between the left and the right in the country. I mean, you can see it. It's pretty.
Oh yeah,
dominant.
It's very evenly split now. We're very highly divided, and I don't know. I right now, if you were to ask me, and the poll numbers reflect it, for the last week or so, I've been thinking that Bush could easily get himself nominated, get himself reelected. And the poll numbers reflect that somehow there's a little bit more support for him than there has been in the last month or so. So I hope you're right, Earl. I hope that Howard Dean gives him a huge run for his money. Howard Dean wins the election. I don't think he's going to be perfect, and I think I'm going to have my problems with him, but I think he's going to be a better president than George W. Bush. Or let me put it this way. I don't think he could be a worse president.
If he wins, I think a lot of it is going to ride on whether there is an election in Iraq in June.
Well,
really
we've got some information about the defections in the Iraqi army. We're hoping that they take a lot of heat off of us so we can get out sooner. And those people are leaving left and right. So I thank you, Earl, for the call. 303-382-1150. Susan calling from Estes Park. Hi, Susan. You're live with Enid.
Hi, Enid. I've been a Dean supporter since last January and have been traveling down to Boulder. And we had a first-time Dean meetup in Estes Park last week. 30 people showed up. The people who started the meetup in Estes are Republicans. And a lot
really?
Of people, yeah. yeah. A lot of people said that they supported Gore, and since he wasn't running, they were looking at Dean. We had some Kucinich supporters. But I thought it was interesting that the diversity of the group was the backgrounds, and that Republicans started the group because they are so upset with what George Bush is doing, and the comment that I heard a lot, and I happen to agree with, is that Dean is fiscally responsible, and that is where we're going to move forward to get us out of the hole that we're in here.
Dean is fiscally responsible, and even though what they are going to do, I think the Republicans are going to demonize him by saying he's a McGovern liberal, or they're going to say he's a wild-eyed liberal. The fact of the matter is he's pretty middle of the road, but that doesn't matter. Because the perception is really what matters. And how they're going to counter this stuff, I don't really know.
That's where the foot soldiers come in. Because if everybody's as passionate as this group and as I am, we're not going to let George Bush and his $250 million decide for us. People are mad, and they are underestimating the disappointment and the betrayal that people feel over what he's done in this country.
All right, let me ask you, of those 30 people at your meetup, how many were Republicans other than the one or two that organized it?
Well, considering how conservative Estes Park is, I would say that we probably had four or five Republicans there.
You had 4 or 5 out of 30, so that's really what, about what percentage?
20, 25? Yeah, 25-30%. But there's also an interesting note that at the beginning of the war, there was a group that 24 hours before the newspaper deadline got a letter together denouncing the war, and in 24 hours they got 180 people to sign this letter that got published the next day.
How did you hear about the meetup? Was it on the net?
It was in one of our local papers, and we all met at Starbucks up there, and everybody was amazed. How many for a first meeting there? And Estes Park is very, very conservative.
I think that's great. I think that's a really good sign, Susan. I thank you for the call.
Thank you, Enid.
You're welcome. 303-382-1150. Eric emails me the quote, the actual quote, the Dean quote. The most interesting theory I've heard so far. Now, this is Dean talking on Diane Rimm's show, which is a Washington, D.C. show, a talk radio show, and she is on NPR. The most interesting theory I've heard so far, said Dean, which is nothing more than a theory, it cannot be proved, is that Bush was warned ahead of time by the Saudis. Dean told a caller in Washington, D.C. This is according to a transcript obtained by opinionjournal.com, and I think Opinion Journal is maybe part of the Wall Street Journal. But in any event, this is the most interesting theory that I've heard so far, said Dean, which is nothing more than a theory, it cannot be proved, is that he was warned ahead of time by the Saudis. So that's a direct quote, and that's from Eric. Thanks, Eric, for that. Donna calling from Aurora. Hi, you're live with Enid.
Enid.
Hi, Donna.
It's Donna. I've talked to you before. I think your show is wonderful.
Thank you.
And you are, too.
Thank you.
And anyway, you can guess what I'm going to say.
Tell me quick, because we got to break
through. There's so much controversy with, like you're talking about Dean right now. People are forgetting there's another man who's so well qualified, and that's General Wesley Clark. And I think he's the one it would take to beat Bush.
I don't know if he's got as much support right now. He doesn't. I don't know.
We have a good support group. He was at the Red Lion Inn the 9th of November, and they expected 400 people. There were almost 900.
Somehow he's been eclipsed in the papers and in the coverage. But, okay, I like Wesley Clark, too. I just think that maybe Dean's got more juice right now.
I think I don't want to say anything bad about Dean, but just his personality comes across to me sort of like he couldn't handle being president, and Wesley Clark could.
He was a good governor for 11 years.
Right, but Wesley Clark has all the knowledge for our problems at home.
Donna, would you go for a 1-2 punch of a Wesley Clark Howard Dean ticket?
I would vote, no matter who it is, Enid, I'll vote. I'll vote for any Democrat would be better than Bush.
ABB, anybody but Bush. All right, you and I are on the same page. I thank you for the call. 303-382-1150. I'm Enid Goldstein. You're listening to the Thursday edition of Enid Live on AM 1150 KNRC. I'm yours, noon to 3 on KNRC. 12:37, time to check into the KNRC newsroom for an update from Tim McLaughlin. Hi, Tim.
Hi, Enid. Good afternoon. Mostly cloudy, 29 degrees. I'm Tim McLaughlin. This report brought to you by Bantam Dell Publishing's Year of Romance. A homeless man who had only a single blanket to protect him from last night's single-digit temperatures froze to death in Civic Center Park. The Colorado Coalition for the Homeless is again urging the city to open the lobby of the Human Services Building as a temporary shelter. The man who allegedly offered to kill the woman who claims basketball star Kobe Bryant raped her is due for a preliminary hearing in Los Angeles today. Patrick Graber's attorney says his client simply wrote fan mail offering to solve Bryant's problem. New photos of a bank robbery suspect from surveillance cameras have been released by the FBI. The robbery happened in Wheat Ridge October 17th. A Wells Fargo bank was hit by the robber, who's described as a white male, early 20s, about 6 feet tall, with a medium build and light brown hair. In sports, the Colorado Avalanche will take on the Canucks tonight in Vancouver. Both teams are even at 36 points in the race for the division title. Get swept away with Madeline Hunter's seducer novels. Meet the charmer. He weaves a sensuous spell of dangerous desires. Read The Charmer and don't miss The Saint and the Sinner, now Bantam paperbacks. Traffic and your exclusive Weather Channel forecast are up next. KNRC News Time is 12:38.
Hi, I'm Judy Schwartz.
And I'm Evelinda Ehrman.
We co-host Style Matters Live on AM 1150 KNRC. You know that we know great shopping. That's why for this holiday season, we'll be at Aspen Grove on Santa Fe and Mineral in Littleton.
You got that right. Aspen Grove is an open-air shopping center. Park right in front of great stores like Pottery Barn, Coldwater Creek, Talbot's, and Chico's. It's an urban feel in the heart of suburbia with seven great restaurants. No food court food here.
Aspen Grove has stores you'd find at any mall, plus a few wonderful exclusives like the Carol Lee Adrian Vitadini shop, the new Italian department store Camille Lavie, and White House Black Market.
He will buy an outfit in white, and then I'm going to buy the same one in black.
I heard that. For the holidays, Aspen Grove has free carriage rides. Have the whole family sign up for the gift registry. Make sure everyone gets what they really want.
Aspen Grove is located on Santa Fe at Mineral and Littleton near the light rail station. Open Mondays through Saturdays 10 to 9 and Sundays 11 to 6.
You can't top Aspen Grove, where life meets style.
KNRC News Time is 12:39. Time to check the roads with Darren Copeland in the KNRC Traffic Center.
This traffic report is brought to you by Nestle Toll House. Got a bit of a problem southbound I-25 after Evans got a stall in the right lane. That's going to back up traffic. It's usually a little slow through there anyway. A little extra backup into the Central Valley, and so watch for that. Everything else, though, looking pretty good. Start your own tradition this year and bring your family together to bake your very best cookie recipe with America's favorite chocolate chip, Nestle Toll House Morsels. I'm Darren Copeland with your KNRC traffic.
I'm Colleen Swales with a KNRC forecast from the Weather Channel. Mostly cloudy skies drifting in this afternoon with a high near 36. That's just about 10 degrees below average. Heading into tonight, mostly cloudy, a low of 15, and then a few morning flurries on Friday with some cloud cover. But by the afternoon, after lunchtime, turning partly cloudy with a high near 30. Good Saturday on tap, partly cloudy and breezy with a high around 40 degrees. For the Weather Channel, I'm Colleen Swales on AM 1150 KNRC.
It's mostly cloudy, 29 degrees. KNRC News Time is 12:40. I'm Tim McLaughlin. Our next news at 1 o'clock or when it breaks on AM 1150 KNRC.
Hi, I'm Enid Goldstein. Get up close and personal with the Colorado Symphony in the only concert hall in America where the music literally becomes the center of attraction. The CSO is offering KNRC listeners 20% off tickets in the Parquet and Mezzanine 1 sections of Bet Your Concert Hall for all Masterworks and Super Pops performances. These seats put you practically in the middle of the orchestra. You can watch the conductor's every move and hear the majesty and force of the music build before you.
It's big, it's grand, it's fabulous family fun. Don't miss a Colorado Christmas this Thursday through Sunday, December 11th through 14th, with over 300 performers at Bet Your Concert Hall. A Colorado Christmas will have you singing and dancing to your favorite holiday music. Tickets available at all King Supers, Ticket West outlets, and online at www.coloradosymphony.org.
And to get up close and personal with the CSO, call 303-893-4100. That's 303-893-4100.
The three major stock averages are all camped out in positive territory this hour. In fact, they're all hitting their highs for the day. The Dow is ahead 81, the NASDAQ climbing 32, the S&P 500 gaining 11. Among the blue chips, Caterpillar's up $1.62 a day after CEO Glenn Barton said he's retiring next month from the heavy machinery maker. Bargain hunters are moving in today on some airline stocks. Frontier is soaring almost 13% or $1.50. Continental is adding 62 cents. Delta is gaining some 29 cents. The publisher of USA Today is reporting some good news. Gannett says revenue rose 3% last month. Gannett is adding 68 cents. And gold futures closed lower today in New York, trading at 405.40 an ounce. Again, the Dow advancing 78 points. The NASDAQ up 31. I'm John Wardock from the newsroom at MarketWatch.com.
Our contact number, 303-382-1150.
We hear you.
303-382-1150. Close is your phone. 303-382-1150. KNRC.
1243 on the Thursday edition of Enid Live. Tomorrow we're going to be live from the Denver Press Club. It's the holiday edition. Judy and Evelinda, our style twins, are going to be with us. Suzanne Brown from the Denver Post. And we've got a lot of people who are going to help us navigate the holidays. What gifts to buy, how much you should tip, which is always an interesting question. What are you supposed to do around the holiday season, et cetera? Singers and performers and carolers and I don't know what. John Enslin always helps with our, does the producing on our shows from the press club, and he lines up all kinds of fascinating people. So I have no idea what we're going to be doing tomorrow. Well, I do have a little bit of an idea, but whatever it is, it'll be festive and celebratory. You're always invited to come down to the Denver Press Club and think about coming to join us for breakfast. Join me and Bruce Goldberg and other denizens of the Press Club the 18th of December. They are, I'm the featured speaker. It's 9 o'clock at the Denver Press Club. It's $10 if you're a member, $12 if you're not. It's on Glen Arm right across from the Denver Athletic Club. And Channel 8 there will be taping, and so it will be rebroadcast sometime in January. So come and join us, and I don't know what to expect exactly, but I'll have my body armor on. Ethel Tim Brown, who will be joining us on Wednesday, Tell It to Tim, a popular and occasional segment on the Enid Show. He will be here at 1 o'clock, taking all of your calls. Anything you want to say about KNRC, positive, negative, neutral. He will listen to it, and that is Wednesday at 1 o'clock. 2 o'clock today, Paul Krugman from the New York Times. A number of you have called. He's one of my favorite columnists. He's one of the very few who have been willing to take Bush on head first, really. Feisty in print, and he comes with some heavyweight credentials. He's an economist. And when you're dealing with all this economic meltdown, such as we are, to have a good economist to explain it to us is valuable. And also, he has been not shy at all. He wasn't really politicized, not until he started writing this column and began to see what was going on in Washington. But he will tell us all that, and he will tell it to us in the 2 o'clock hour. What we're talking about now is the Dean nomination. The Republicans are getting ready to demonize him. Also, one of the top stories, front page story today in the New York Times, and that is that the Pentagon screwed George W. Bush. As you know, yesterday it came out that the contracts that were going to be awarded were not for the reconstruction of Iraq, are not going to be awarded to anybody who didn't help us in going into Iraq, and specifically excluded our countries like Russia, France, Germany, even Canada, although that's apparently been rescinded, or at least Bush has notified the Canadians that, yes, they can build. But here that comes out yesterday, and it's in unusually blunt language, that unless you were among the coalition of the willing, a coalition of the unwilling, well, what coalition was there? It was us, the UK, and maybe Bulgaria and a couple of South Pacific nations, I think. Unless you were in favor of the war and helped us, you cannot participate in the spoils of the war, which is the reconstruction. At the same time, Bush was making phone calls to get these countries, France, Germany, Russia, the ones that he's excluding from reconstruction contracts, to get these countries to forgive their debts to Iraq, to forgive. I can't believe it. So here he's saying, you know what, screw you guys, you're getting nothing out of this. Oh, and by the way, can you forgive these debts, Iraq's debts? So here is the New York Times reporting. President Bush found himself in the awkward position of calling the leaders of France, Germany, and Russia to ask them to forgive Iraq's debts just a day after the Pentagon excluded these countries and others from $18 billion in American-financed Iraqi reconstruction projects. Now, I can understand saying, look, if you weren't in there willing to risk lives and go in with us, you're not going to participate in the spoils. I can't understand that. But they were against it. Diplomatically, you don't want to alienate them. You need their help. We're in a quagmire situation. We're hoping to turn Iraq over to its own military, but guess what? Its own military are defecting left and right, and we don't know why. So here are a list of some of the countries that are eligible to compete for contracts in the reconstruction. Afghanistan is eligible. Albania is also eligible. Angola is too. Australia is. Bulgaria, yes. Yes, indeedy. Denmark. El Salvador. Eritrea. Estonia. Ethiopia. Georgia. Honduras. Iceland is also eligible to participate. Iraq is eligible, of course. Italy. Japan. Jordan. Kazakhstan, and so on. Let me see some. The United Arab Emirates are eligible as well. Saudi Arabia is eligible in the reconstruction. Saudi Arabia, 15 of those 19 hijackers had Saudi passports. Oh, how could I have forgotten? Palau in the South Pacific. Palau is eligible to help in the rebuilding, as is Oman and Mongolia. Moldova, and I don't see Tibet here either, but I was I'm happy certainly to know that Afghanistan can help us out when we really need it. 303, oh, Tonga, too. Tonga can help us in, and the Solomon Islands are eligible also to help us in the reconstruction. 303-382-1150. How smart is this? Do you have to be really brilliant to realize that you have got, you're going to need your allies here, and now you're cutting them out of any largesse. You're asking them to forgive Iraq's debt. And if they don't do it, who's going to pay it? Who is going to pay that debt? Would it be us, do you think? Huh? So Bush's advisors are focusing on Dean as a likely opponent for next year. Cindy Blumenthal is just beside himself. Al Gore's endorsement of Howard Dean gives voice to Democratic voters' outrage over the 2000 election and the spineless conduct of the Democratic Party since then. And I second that. The Democratic Party has been completely spineless. 303-382-1150. Also, there's a big spending bill that the Democrats have blocked. Do you know what was in that bill? A lot of things. Among them, provisions that let companies deny overtime to more white-collar workers, provisions that postponed country of origin labels on many foods for 2 years, allowed networks to own more television stations, aided Bush's plan to let private companies do more federal work, and last but not least, required the FBI to destroy gun purchase applications after only 1 day. You got that? 303-382-1150. Dave, calling on a cell. Hi, you're live with Enid.
Hi, Enid. Hi. I still wish you were on in the evenings. Please forward that to management.
Well, you can forward that yourself. Tim is going to be on at 1 o'clock next Wednesday. Tell it to Tim. Tim Brown, our CEO.
Okay, I'll take the day off for
that. Okay.
I think we read the same article, but I just wanted to point out that, I don't know if you mentioned this, I just tuned in, but France, Germany, and Russia all are assisting us and have lost people in...
Where are you, Dave? We just lost you. Uh-oh, he's on a cell. All right, well, I don't know. Call us back if you can. Here's the story. Canada, which is initially shut out, and then I see a report today that, in fact, George Bush assured the Canadian foreign minister or prime minister that, in fact, Canada could partake in the reconstruction. Canada has so far donated $190 million. $190 million. Now, I don't know to what extent countries like France, Germany, Russia, and so on have donated aid and so on, but Bush wants Iraq's debts forgiven by these countries. And yet he's shutting out these countries from any potential profit. And look what Halliburton's doing. They're gouging. They're getting twice the 200% of what gas should cost. They're charging the government. Other companies can do it for half the price of Halliburton. So 303-382-1150. Are you happy about this? I'm Enid Goldstein. You're listening to the Thursday edition of Enid Live on AM 1150 KNRC.
Tell your friends about Denver's best-kept secret. Talk radio where you can hear both sides throughout the day. AM 1150, KNRC.
This ski season, save money on lift tickets with the Colorado Gems card and the 5th grade passport. Two great offers available on the internet at coloradoski.com. With the Colorado Gems card, you get discounts on lift tickets and other special offers good throughout the ski season. With the 5th grade passport, 5th graders ski and board for no charge at 23 Colorado resorts. The Colorado Gems card and the 5th grade passport, sponsored by Colorado Ski Country USA and aired in cooperation with the Colorado Broadcasters Association and this station.
Do you want out of high car payments? Then the John Elway Showrooms want to swap cars with you. You could end up making lower payments than you have now. Swap cars and let John Elway take your old car and lower your monthly payments.
Tickets are on sale now for the 2004 KeyBank Denver Distinguished Lecture Series, featuring the dynamic lineup of Her Majesty Queen Noor on January 20th, retired General Tommy Franks on March 30th, and Steve Forbes on May 17th. Tickets start at only $50 for the 3-lecture package and are on sale now. Go to www.denverlectureseries.com and expand your world by attending the 2004 KeyBank Distinguished Lecture Series, a program of junior achievement and sponsored in part by AM 1150 KNRC. listening to the Enid Goldstein Show on AM 1150 KNRC. Here again, Enid Goldstein.
12:53 on the Thursday edition of Enid Live. I'm yours until 3 o'clock, noon to 3. Let's have lunch together Monday through Friday, noon to 3. I'll turn you on if you turn me on. 303-382-1150. Bob, calling from Colorado Springs. Hi, you're live with Enid.
Hi, Enid. I just listened to your topic there about us trying to keep the French and the Germans and the Canadians from joining the rebuilding of Iraq. As I understand it, France, when we asked them to join the coalition, said, well, you know, we don't believe there's weapons of mass destruction. We don't believe that you have justification for going to war.
Mm-hmm.
However, if you do, once you get in there, if you find weapons of mass destruction, we'll send our troops in there in a heartbeat. So, you know, they're just sticking by their pronouncement that, you know, this war was not justified, and we're trying to present it as if they opposed the war. You know, we didn't. We just never gave them adequate justification to join the war. So,
not only that, but we had already dissed them in advance of wanting their help and their participation.
Yeah, it, you know, if we ever want to build any kind of coalitions, this is certainly not the way to do it. You know, I don't know what we have for foreign policy, but anything would be an improvement.
Well, I think so too, and that's why I'm not worried about that's why I am not worried about Howard Dean. I think that George W. Bush is a kind of cipher, a kind of blank slate, a kind of tabula rasa, who is being manipulated by the stronger people around him, who are old hands, practiced hands, infighters, and have agendas.
Absolutely.
And he is, this is a guy who's almost too dumb to breathe. I mean, I'm not saying he's stupid. He's not stupid. But I think he's highly manipulatable. I think he is as surprised as anybody to find himself in the position of President of the United States. And it was reported that his parents were the most surprised of all because he was kind of a black sheep in the family. He hadn't accomplished much. A drunk until he was 40, flop at just about everything he tried. And then Karl Rove sees somebody who seems affable, who can deal with the public, who can handle retail politics, and who's got a real pedigree, and they think they can ride this guy to the White House, and that's exactly what they did.
Yeah, I think that's why he's in there, because he was so, they're able to manipulate him. He didn't have anything on his own.
But you got a real Farbissum crowd here in this White House. This is a grit your teeth crowd that they're going to slap you around. You're going to toe the mark, or they're going to slap you around. And if you're another country, if you don't fall in line, that's it. You're out insofar as the reconstruction contracts are. There's something about that mentality that is also pervading the Justice Department. We're going to clamp down on you. We're going to tamp down on you. That is the mentality. These people are pit bulls, and it's being written in increasingly about the kind of hardball that they play. And you saw one example of it when they were willing to out Joseph Wilson's wife and put her in jeopardy and put her network in jeopardy just to do payback on Joseph Wilson.
Yeah, absolutely. You know,
so I don't see.
Need to look at, you know, the project for the new American century, and you know, that's part of what's going on here.
Yeah, but you're in Colorado Springs. You haven't met much company there in wanting to vote for anybody but Bush?
Well, I'm glad to be standing up against these idiots down here that don't know how to think for themselves. You know, it is incredible how, you know, you can't even elect a dog catcher.
Why don't you try to do a Howard Dean meetup? And I bet you there are a lot of people in Colorado Springs who would be looking for some like-minded folks to get to know and who feel as you do.
Yeah, I might try that. I actually worked for Wesley Clark while he was the 3rd Brigade Commander down here at Fort Carson for several years.
What did you think of him?
I was tremendously impressed with him as a leader. I disagree with him on a couple of issues on he didn't have much knowledge about medical marijuana, but
All right.
A whole lot of.
All right,
okay.
Bob, we're going to leave it there. Thank you for the call. 303-382-1150. I just got this from Dan. Dan says he's got statistics on who goes to the Dean meetups. Demographically, Dean meetup attendees are mostly white, 90%, middle age, 44 years on average, middle income, about $67,000 per household, 44% professionals. For comparison, the average national average for Internet users in the general population is 80% white, 36 years old on average, households with an average income of $62,000. Well, our Dean meetup respondents almost universally reported heavy Internet usage, 91% went online at least once a day. Conclusions, Dean meetup attendees fit the stereotype of predominantly white and middle class. The average age is higher than the stereotype. Internet usage is well above average. And then he goes on to give me some more statistics here. In the 2000 election, 72% voted for Gore, 12% for Nader, 2% for Bush. 66% self-identified as strong Democrats, 19% as independents, 39% self-identified as progressive, 32% liberal. I'm not sure I know the difference between liberal and progressive. 11% as populist. On a scale of 1 to 5, 3.6% for Bradley, 3.1% for John McCain, 3% for Ralph Nader, 2% for Russ Perot, 1.1% for George Bush. So anyway, that's a sort of a breakdown of the Dean supporters. 303-382-1150. I think it's going to be very interesting. As a connoisseur of reporting and of campaign nastiness, I think we should keep our eyeballs peeled as to how they're going to demonize Dean the way they did Al Gore. Remember they said that he lied and said that he invented the Internet? He never said that. But for some reason, that was broadcast widely, and nobody ever denied it until well after the election was over. So keep your eyeballs peeled, and think of ways that we could counter whatever's going to come down. I'm Enid Goldstein. Two more hours of Enid coming up right here on the Thursday edition of Enid Live, AM 1150, KNRC.
Both sides talk. AM 1150, KNRC, Englewood, Denver. Enid Goldstein continues straight ahead. It's 1 o'clock.
Good afternoon, mostly cloudy, 31 degrees. I'm Tim McLaughlin. This report brought to you by South Central Marriott Hotels and Resorts. Aurora police are asking for help in finding a rape suspect. On November 6th, a woman met a man in the Stampede Bar located at 2430 South Havana. He asked her to go outside, then into his SUV. She accepted both initial officers, but said no when the man offered a ride. The suspect drove to a nearby parking lot anyway and raped the woman. He finally stopped after repeated pleas that he stop. He then drove her back to the Stampede Bar and dropped her off. The man is described as a light-skinned black male, 6'5", muscular, with very bright and straight teeth. Police have released surveillance photos from the Stampede and ask that anyone who thinks they may have seen the man to call. On December 19th, Colorado's law enforcement family begins a 16-day full-on assault against drunk driving. It's the latest installment of the Heat is On campaign. Governor Bill Owens today told reporters the campaign is made possible by nearly $2 million in grants.
Quite appropriately, these grants are funded entirely by fees paid by convicted drunken drivers. So we make those who break our laws help fund in the prevention of additional drunk driving.
The governor says 1,300 officers will take part in the campaign and that the lowest possible penalty for DUI is a $500 fine. The family of Brandon Magnuson wants to know the details of a police chase that ultimately resulted in the death of the 14-year-old boy. On December 4th, police were chasing Raymond Jewell for allegedly driving recklessly. The chase began in Commerce City and ended in Thornton when the vehicle Jewell was driving struck the vehicle occupied by 14-year-old Brandon and his mother. The boy was killed. His mother was critically injured. Now the family wants to know if the traffic offense allegedly committed by Jewel was enough to justify the boy's death. Jewel, who was also hurt in the crash, faces numerous charges, including first-degree murder and vehicular homicide. Commerce City Police have refused to release the police report of that incident. At least one U.S. soldier is dead, more than a dozen others injured in the wake of a suicide car bombing west of Baghdad. Meanwhile, President Bush continues to defend the U.S. decision to bar some nations from bidding on primary Iraqi reconstruction bids. Germany, France, and Russia, who oppose the war, are among those countries excluded. Following his last cabinet meeting of the year, Bush suggested that the door remains open to Germany, Russia, and France, but he stopped short of saying they'll need to contribute troops.
And we welcome contributions. We welcome people's willingness to participate in this difficult yet important job of rebuilding Iraq. We have a common goal, and that is to see that Iraq is free and peaceful.
The mother of a missing college student is pleading for help from the mother of the man charged in her daughter's disappearance. Linda Walker, Drew Shadeen's mother, told the Grand Forks Herald that she called Dolores Rodriguez and asked her to reach out to her son to lead the family to Shadeen. Police in Grand Forks say evidence found in Alfonso Rodriguez Jr.'s car includes a knife and blood that matches the DNA of the University of North Dakota student who's been missing for more than 2 weeks. The prosecution in the capital murder trial of Lee Boyd Malvo is trying to discredit a psychiatrist who has testified the alleged D.C. area sniper was insane during the 2002 shooting spree. Kathy Culpepper has more.
Attorney Robert Horan has gone over every murder that Malvo and sniper John Muhammad committed. Horan has hammered on the fact that if Malvo had an irresistible impulse to kill, how come Malvo was able to help Muhammad pick kill zones and scope out escape routes before the crimes were committed? Horan told Dr. Neil Blumberg that under Virginia's insanity criteria, an impulsive crazy person would not be capable of planning such a crime in advance. Blumberg has repeatedly told Horan that Malvo could do it because he was being controlled by Muhammad. Kathy Culpepper, Chesapeake.
An Illinois man and woman are now formally charged with first-degree murder in the drowning deaths of three young children. The pair appeared in court today in DeWitt County, but did not enter pleas to the charges brought against them. The children, all under the age of seven, died in September after the car they were riding in was allegedly driven or pushed into a lake by their mother and her boyfriend. In sports, it's the Avs versus the Canucks tonight in Vancouver. Last time the two teams met was last season, back in February. Mike Anderson has finished his four-game suspension, and the Denver Bronco fullback is now back with the team. He'd been suspended for testing positive for marijuana. It's the perfect time to take a break, whether you're planning for the holidays or a weekend getaway. Marriott has great rates from just $59. Visit southcentral.marriott.com for details. Traffic and your exclusive Weather Channel forecast are up next. KNRC News Time is 105.
Dear smokers, my name's Megan, and I'm here to ask you to stop smoking. My daddy used to smoke. He was always promising to quit. He finally did, but then it was too late. He had cancer, and now he's dead. I'm only 10 years old, and I miss my dad. He was my best friend, and now he's gone.
If you're ready to quit smoking, we can help. We're the makers of Smoke Away, a product clinically tested and proven to eliminate your cravings and have you smoke-free in just 7 days. It's all natural and nicotine-free, and best of all, it's guaranteed to work or your money back. Call us today. Thousands have already quit using Smokeaway. Shouldn't you?
Please quit smoking.
Call now for your risk-free trial. 1-800-219-2704. That's 1-800-219-2704. Money back if you aren't cigarette-free in just 7 days. Call toll-free. 1-800-219-2704. That's 1-800-219-2704.
KNRC News Time is 106. Time to go to Darren Copeland in the KNRC Traffic Center.
This traffic report is brought to you by the Denver Rescue Mission, and we have a bit of a problem. A westbound I-70 on the ramp to Havana got a stall. Cleared two other stalls, northbound I-25 just after 225, as well as southbound I-25 under Evans. The Denver Rescue Mission, serving the poor and needy for over 110 years. Donate your car to the Denver Rescue Mission and support a program that cares for the less fortunate while enjoying great tax benefits. Call Rachel at 303-297-1815. I'm Darren Copeland with your KNRC traffic.
I'm Colleen Swales with a KNRC forecast from the Weather Channel. Mostly cloudy skies drifting in this afternoon with a high near 36. That's just about 10 degrees below average. Heading into tonight, mostly cloudy, a low of 15, and then a few morning flurries on Friday with some cloud cover. But by the afternoon, after lunchtime, turning partly cloudy with a high near 30. Good Saturday on tap, partly cloudy and breezy with a high around 40 degrees. For the Weather Channel, I'm Colleen Swales on AM 1150 KNRC.
It's mostly cloudy, 31 degrees. KNRC News Time is 107. I'm Tim McLaughlin. Our next news at 135 or when it breaks on AM 1150 KNRC.
Now, the Enid Goldstein Show continues on AM 1150 KNRC.
107, 7 minutes after 1 o'clock. Welcome to the Thursday edition of Enid Live. I'm yours until 3 o'clock, and in the next hour, in the 2 o'clock hour, we're going to be joined by Paul Krugman, who is a New York Times columnist. He's an op-ed columnist in the New York Times. His new book is called The Great Unraveling, Losing Our Way in the New Century. And why does he feel this way? He's one of the very few people willing to take on George Bush head-to-head. He's been absolutely unrelenting in it, and he is the perfect person to explain economic issues. He teaches at Princeton. He has a doctorate in economics, and he's very well regarded. He's written a number of books, some of them way too complicated for the layman to understand, but many not. And this is one of them, The Great Unraveling, a collection of his columns. So I'm very interested to talk to him. And we'll be doing that in the next hour. What we were talking about, we're talking about a lot of different things, and I have more things that I want to discuss with you. We're talking about the Dean nomination, how the Republicans are planning to demonize him. Demonized Dean. So we got to keep our eyeballs peeled to see how they do that. They did it with Gore, and they were rather successful at it. Also, we're talking about Bush in the awkward and embarrassing position of having to deal with a Pentagon directive that says, and in very blunt terms, that allies are going to be barred from any Iraq reconstruction deals, France, Germany, Russia, because they didn't join us when we went to war. And now he's calling those very same countries to beg them to forgive Iraq's debts. Canada's even been shut out, although there's a later report saying maybe they're not going to be shut out. They've contributed $190 million so far to Iraq, and they are not amused. So I want to hear what Paul Krugman has to say about this, and you may have opinions as well. I see the board is lighting up. So 303-382-1150, more as we continue, because I got some juicy stuff I also want to share with you. Aaron, calling from where? Firestone?
Yes, ma'am.
Hi, Aaron. Welcome to the
Hi.
Show.
Thank you. I'm a first-time caller. I've never called a radio station.
Oh, wait a minute. A first-time caller. Just a
yes,
minute.
Yes, ma'am.
Here you go.
Thank you for
That's
that.
Our cheesy little kiss for first-time callers. So you've never called any radio station before in your whole life?
No, ma'am. I'm shaking like a rabbit.
All right. I would too, but really don't, because everybody feels a little bit nervous. But anyway, tell me why you called.
Well, I was calling. I had a question for you because I'm not real sure about the answer. I was wondering how much debt alleviation has the United States given in the last several years? And the reason I ask this is because it seems a bit hypocritical to me if we are going to beg Russia, Germany, and France to alleviate the debt in Iraq when we still hold millions and millions of dollars over these third and fourth world countries.
You know, that is a very good question. And the person to ask it of is going to be Paul Krugman of the New York Times, who is an economist. So
I'm so excited to hear him. I've read a couple of his books.
Have you? And do you
yes.
see his columns? You can see them online. Even if you don't buy the New York Times, you can get it online, nytimes.com. So, all right. So I'm going to write this question down because, Aaron, or if you would like to call back at that time, but how much debt alleviation have we participated in?
Right.
I think we did a lot during World War II. We forgave a lot of debt during World War II.
I know we did that. I just wonder how much we have in the recent...
In the recent past?
In the recent years, yeah.
That's an excellent question. I cannot answer it. Maybe somebody else can, but I will certainly ask that of Paul Krugman.
Well, thank you so much for taking my call.
Thank you so much for calling in.
I continue to watching your, listening to your program. I just love you.
Thank you. And keep calling us. Will you, Aaron?
I will.
Okay. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, ma'am.
303-382-1150. Damon, calling from Aurora. Hi, you're live with Enid.
Hi, Enid. I know that what I'm about to talk about has been covered by other people before, but apparently some people just aren't getting it. I have 3 points real quick here.
Mm-hmm.
Have you noticed that Bush speaks better Spanish than he does English?
Can we tell for sure?
Actually, he has.
He doesn't have a great accent, and I can speak some Spanish, but I really couldn't assess his abilities as a Spanish speaker.
Yeah, he just seems to pull it off a little better than he does English, I think.
Okay.
By pushing Patriot Act 1, by pushing forward Patriot Act 1 and is wanting to push through Patriot Act 2, it feels to me like he's trying to turn our country into a banana republic.
That is exactly Paul Krugman's point, but he doesn't do it because of the Patriot Act. He's doing it because of these massive deficits and the massive amount of spending. He thinks that we are going to be a banana republic very quickly if this isn't get checked. And that's another reason why you want somebody who's going to be more fiscally responsible. The Republicans have always had the reputation of being fiscally responsible, but not this crew. This crew has been fiscally frivolous and irresponsible. So Paul Krugman is the one who really can speak to that, and he thinks we will very quickly turn into a banana republic. He changed the whole financing of his own mortgage. I think he went from a variable to a fixed rate. I can't remember the column exactly, but months ago when he saw the handwriting on the wall, he said, this is what I'm going to do. And I think he turned out to be prescient. We'll talk to him about that.
Okay. Well, one of the things about one of the things that really that and it's just kind of all sort of interrelated, but
Damon, you got to tell me quick. We can't be good. We can't be umming around here.
I'm sorry. Does he want to be called El Presidente?
Well, that's a question, and it's a good one to ask. I thank you for the call. 303-382-1150. 303-382-1150. I'm going to give you some information that you may not know about. First of all, I haven't really talked about this. This has been going on for a while, and I haven't had a chance to get to it, but let me share it with you. This is from the Denver Post. As they fight an unseen enemy in Iraq, Colorado National Guard members are fighting a bureaucracy at home just to get their paychecks. Colorado Special Forces Guardsmen have faced the same struggle in Afghanistan, fixing pay glitches by satellite phone between search and destroy missions against Al-Qaeda. So they go out there and they're doing their best not to get blown apart. And then when they come back from their mission, they got to get on the horn to find out why their checks are wrong or misplaced or not arriving the way they're supposed to. Two Colorado units were among case studies extensively documented in a congressional report. The problem is system-wide, affecting potentially hundreds of units and thousands of soldiers. According to the report, the GAO, the General Accounting Office, released a report that found the system used to pay activated National Guard troops is so cumbersome that 94% of the soldiers serving in six sample units in Afghanistan, including Colorado's B Company, 5th Battalion, 19th Special Forces, had some sort of a paycheck problem. When the Colorado Special Forces unit returned home from Afghanistan, some soldiers kept getting active duty pay, while others were hit with erroneous bills. According to the report, 34 of the unit's soldiers were billed a largely erroneous average of $48,000 for being overpaid. Their combined bills total $1.6 million. The report took a more limited look at a situation in Iraq, looking at the Colorado Army National Guard's 220th Military Police Company, which is doing highway and convoy security. Two members have been wounded. Of the 152 mobilized soldiers from that unit, 54 have been underpaid, so one-third, paid late, hit with erroneous loans, or overpaid, according to the GAO report. As of August 20th, soldiers were still not receiving the correct pay. One of the things that President Bush said when he was trying to get himself elected, he's a uniter, not a divider. And one of the things that people said about him and his cronies and cohorts and cabinet members, well, the grown-ups are now back in charge. The grown-ups can't even figure out a way to get our guys and our men and women paid correctly and on time. The grown-ups cannot figure out a way to do that. 303-382-1150. And here is some information that you may not know about the some numbers and some statistics. Average savings members of Bush cabinet will receive this year, thanks to the cuts in their capital gains and dividend taxes. The Bush cabinet, the average savings that they are going to receive this year, thanks to the cuts in their capital gains and dividend taxes, the tax cuts, the average savings, how much in the Bush cabinet are they going to get? $42,000 a year. $42,000. Are you going to get $42,000 in savings because of the tax cuts? $28 billion, the amount of proposed cuts to veterans' benefits in the Congressional Republicans' budget resolution for the fiscal year 2004. They wanted to cut $28 billion to veterans' benefits. In the end, they wound up cutting only $6 billion. They want these people, let me see if I've got this right. They say they support our troops, and that if you question why we're in Iraq, you're unpatriotic. I guess their idea of supporting our men and women who are risking their lives is to cut the veterans' benefits $28 billion. They wound up cutting it $6 billion. They should be adding, not subtracting. And here they are. The one hand, the Pentagon is saying to our closest allies, you can't get a penny in the reconstruction. And on the other hand, the White House is calling these same closest allies to ask them if they will forgive Iraq's debts. Now, is your head swimming yet? Mine is. $6,000, the amount of proposed increase opposed by President Bush in benefits to families of soldiers who die in combat. The proposed increase, $6,000. Which President Bush has opposed. I guess this is part of his We Support the Troops program. We will oppose any increase in benefits to families of soldiers who die in combat. Thanks to White House pressure, the increase did not pass Congress. So this $6,000 proposed increase to families who lose loved ones in combat, it didn't pass because Bush opposed it. I guess that's another example of supporting our troops. 2 years that veterans in some part of the countries have to wait for a doctor's appointment. 2 years. This with a proposed new $250 enrollment fee in their health plan and increased prescription drug costs. Veterans in some part of the country have to wait 2 years for a doctor's appointment. 7, the number of hospitals that Bush's Veterans Administration announced it was closing one day before the president addressed a group of veterans in St. Louis. 7, the number of hospitals Bush's Veterans Administration announced it was closing one day before he was set to address a group of veterans. $127 billion, the amount of the U.S. budget surplus in fiscal 2001, the year that Bush became president. $374 billion, the amount of the deficit in fiscal year 2003. This is going to be the biggest deficit in budget history, in U.S. history. $290 billion, the amount of the second largest U.S. budget deficit in 1992, the last full year of the first Bush administration. $684 quadrillion, yes, quadrillion, current national debt. $9.3 quadrillion, estimated national debt by 2008. $1.58 billion, the amount on average of the national debt increases every single day. $23,396 is the amount of each U.S. citizen's share of the national debt as of October 21, 2003. Number one record for most bankruptcies filed in a single year set in 2002. 440,257, the number of bankruptcies filed during the second quarter of 2003, more than in any other quarter in history. And on it goes. Under this crowd, you cannot have them serving 5 seconds longer. Chris, calling from Broomfield. Hi, you're live with Enid.
Hey, nice litany there, Enid. I'd also like to add, you know, I was driving home yesterday and I was listening to a conservative commentator, no less, castigating Bush for, in essence, you know, our big position now is that we're liberating Iraq, providing freedom to the Iraqi people. Well, he went on, I guess, on news with the Chinese foreign minister or whatnot, and basically decried Taiwan's attempt to put a referendum up to declare their sovereignty from China.
Right. So which conservative commentator were you listening to?
Oh, goodness. It wasn't Rush. It was some independent guy on a small station out of Utah.
Well, I'm encouraging conservatives to call me and how you can refute these numbers. I would love to hear from those of you who are conservative or deeply Republican or are going to vote for Bush again. How can you live with these kinds of numbers?
Well, I just want to add, there is a big enchantment coming, especially amongst what I'd like to, you know, label true Republicans, those that are fiscally conservative, you know, especially with the Medicare overhaul and whatnot. There's a lot of disenchantment going on.
Well, that Medicare bill is a scandal, and I'm going to get to that presently. But, Chris, I thank you for the call. I just think, though, that people who are not going to vote for Bush are overly optimistic. Those people are hardball players. They'll stop at nothing if they are willing to out a CIA undercover operative to get back at her husband, risking her life and the life of those in her network. They'll stop at nothing to get their boy reelected because they stand to gain way too much if he is reelected, and they stand to lose way too much if he is not. So I don't think you can be complacent here for one single second. Teresa, on a cell. Hi, you're live with Enid.
Hi, Enid. How are you?
Good, thanks.
Just have a question, and maybe your economic guy, when he comes on, will be able to answer it. You know, the Democrats are all saying that they're going to repeal the Bush
tax cuts.
But they weren't tax cuts. They were advances. Doesn't anybody get that $400 was not a rebate or a cut? It was an advance?
Let me ask. Krugman is the guy to ask about that.
Okay.
So what I'll do is I'll ask about the tax cut, the repeal of tax cuts. Are those advances, and see how he handles it?
It's my understanding that come April, if you got the 400 and you were expecting maybe to get 400 back in April, you've just wiped that out.
So you just got it early.
Right.
Well, some people got more than simply getting it early. They benefited big time. Now, the number here that I've got, the statistic in front of me, is that the average savings that Bush cabinet members will receive due to their cuts in capital gains is going to be $42,000. So that's average for the people at that level. He's got a very rich cabinet. The least millionaire in the cabinet is Condoleezza Rice, who has a Chevron tanker named after her. But this is a cabinet. I don't think there are any Jews in his cabinet, but he's got a very rich cabinet. I will ask Paul Krugman the question, Therese. Anything else?
No, that's it.
Thanks very much for the call. 303-382-1150. I'm Enid Goldstein. You're listening to the Thursday edition of Enid Live on AM 1150 KNRC.
How Denver and Colorado spell great talk radio. KNRC.
Are you tired of the weight loss battle? Do you find yourself feeling desperate to lose weight and keep it off? Listen to what UltraCarb users are saying about their experiences.
I've been on UltraCarb for 2 weeks. I've lost a total of 10 pounds, and I cannot believe it.
In the first 9 days since using UltraCarb, I lost 10 pounds. It's the only thing that's worked for me, and I am so excited to get down to my goal weight. Right now, I'm losing 20 pounds a month, and within 6 weeks, I'll have reached my goal. UltraCarb is amazing, and I would recommend it to anyone who really wants to lose this weight.
Whoever said losing weight has to be difficult has not used UltraCarb. UltraCarb works by blocking carbohydrates, the source of most weight gain. If you want to lose up to 20 pounds and 2 to 3 dress or pant sizes per month, call now. UltraCarb is 100% guaranteed to work or receive a full refund. Call now to look and feel better about yourself.
Call 1-800-451-6432 and find out how you can get 1 month free with your order. That's 1-800-451-6432.
Some people prefer the right wing. Others prefer the left wing. Hear both sides talk on AM 1150 KNRC. Our diverse lineup of talk show hosts features more viewpoints and perspectives than any other Denver talk station. Join Greg Dobbs from 6 to 10 a.m. Bill O'Reilly from 10 to noon. Enid Goldstein from noon to 3. Doug Kellett from 3 to 6. Dominic and Bill from 6 to 9 p.m. Lionel from 9 to midnight, followed by Alan Combs. Get your side, get their side. Hear both sides talk. AM 1150 KNRC.
Hi, this is Greg Dobb. Join me every weekday morning from 6 to 10 here on AM 1150 KNRC. Now, back to Enid Goldstein.
125 on the Thursday edition of Enid Live. I'm yours until 3 o'clock. Paul Krugman from the New York Times, economist, PhD, teaches at Princeton, joining us in the 2 o'clock hour, if all goes well. I have more statistics about Bush. This land is my land. 58 million, the number of acres of public lands Bush has opened to road building, logging, and drilling. 200, the number of public health and environmental laws Bush has worked to downgrade or weaken since taking office. Number one, rank of U.S. worldwide in terms of greenhouse gas emissions. Number 28, the number of vacation days Bush took in August. This year, the second longest vacation of any president in U.S. history. The record holder was Richard Nixon. 13, the number of vacation days the average American receives each year. 65, the approximate number of fundraisers he attended in 2002. 0, the number of trips taken to Afghanistan before waging war against that country. 0, the number of trips to Iraq before waging war against that country. 0, the number of funerals or memorials Bush has attended for soldiers killed in Iraq. Tough on crime. Number 1, first president to execute a federal prisoner in the last 40 years. 8, the number of days after that first execution that a second federal prisoner was executed. Number 1, as governor of Texas, executed more prisoners, 152, than any governor in modern U.S. history. Champion of women's rights, 0, the number of Bush Court of Appeals and nominees who have endorsed the legal foundation of Roe v. Wade. Number 1, this is under the headline, Helping the Advantaged. Bush has assembled the wealthiest cabinet in U.S. history. $10.9 million, that's the average wealth of the members of the Bush original 16-person cabinet. 75%, that's the percentage of Americans unaffected by Bush's 2003 tax cuts in the capital gains and dividends taxes. So 75% of Americans are unaffected by these tax cuts. $42,000, that's the average savings members of Bush's cabinets are expected to receive this year as a result of cuts in capital gains and dividends taxes. $42,228, that is the median household income in the U.S. in 2001. $116,000, the amount that Vice President Dick Cheney is expected to save each year in his taxes because of his tax cut. Number nine, members of Bush's Defense Policy Board who also sit on the corporate board of or advise at least one defense contractor. On the other hand, you can't have everyone. 43.6, you can't help everyone. 43.6 million, the number of Americans without health insurance as of 2002. $300 million, the amount cut in December 2002 from the federal program that provides subsidies to poor families so they can heat their homes during the winter. On and on it goes. Ron calling from Columbine. Hi, you're live with Enid.
Hey, Enid, bring up the fact, too, if he likes our GI so much, how come in big and military areas like San Francisco, San Diego, and Norfolk, most families, even if they're in the NCO ranks, are living on food stamps?
A lot of them are. He's trying to take away their veterans' benefits. He tried to cut $28 billion from the program. He managed to bring it down to cutting only $6 billion. But I don't understand how you can say you support our troops. I don't understand how people don't hold his feet to the fire over these contradictions, these hypocrisies.
Well, you look at the things like the post, the benefits, like I barely took when I was in the service in the 60s, like the PX and the post commissary. There was supposed to be a cheaper way to get your groceries and stuff, but the big corporations that run the supermarkets and stuff outside screamed and moaned, and they run the commissaries and the PXs now, so where are they saving?
Good question. Thanks, Ron, for the call. 303-382-1150. Bob on a cell. Hi, you're live with Enid.
Hey, Enid. I have a friend that I emailed and telling him about why I'm supporting Dean these days, and I thought he was a fellow Democrat, and surprise, surprise, he switched to support Bush. And he tells me the two reasons that he's doing that. Number one is because it turns out that he feels that Bush did the right thing by taking the fight to the terrorists away from our home country. And so he feels that he doesn't want 911 happening here. He thinks the fight.
Does he not know that our first responders are over in Iraq right now, and that we're more vulnerable than we were, and that Osama bin Laden has directed a lot of his people from Afghanistan over to Iraq? Also, they're recruiting right now heavily in Europe.
Well, I think what he's saying is that he feels, and this is a white male. I think this is one of those angry white males that you hear about, that he's tired of wimpiness, and he wants something to be done, and he sees decisiveness. He's not sure whether it's the right thing, but at least it's not affecting him. And I think this is the kind of fight and the kind of argument that we need to be ready
well,
to
make. I think Dean makes a very feisty, is also a very feisty guy. A little bit, you know, it may not wear well after a while, but right now he seems feisty, so he does bring that to the table. Although, yes, Bush is the one who went into Iraq. What's the second reason your friend's going to go for him?
Oh, basically the economy. He believes all this hype about the economy is getting better and manufacturer orders are up, and so consumer spending is going to be up this Christmas.
Who did he vote for in the last election, your friend?
I think he voted green, actually, for NATO, because he couldn't stand either one of them.
This is the point I'm making, then. You cannot be complacent about the 2004 presidential election, because the Republicans could very well sweep it all over again. Everybody,
yep.
Democrats are saying, well, look at how badly they performed. Apparently, that's not sufficient to get people to open their eyes. You've got to have a constant barrage of very clever attack ads. I don't know what else you have to do. You have to get Americans to wake up and smell the coffee. I don't know how that's going to be done here. I'm so surprised that the hypocrisies aren't sufficient to do it. You have a passive press that's, for some reason, invested in supporting George W. Bush, maybe because he's more in favor of media consolidation. I don't know.
But look at the numbers. You're talking about numbers. There's no liberal press out there to deliver this message.
Well, we're doing our best here.
You are doing your best there.
We're little rabbits. We're doing our best here to counter this whole enormous crush of media that's asleep at the wheel. But here we are. We're fighting, and we're going to go down fighting, Bob. I thank you for the call. 303-382-1115. I hope we don't go down. I hope we succeed. We're triumphant. Bob, another Bob in Denver. Hi, you're live with Enid.
Hi. I just wanted to say, you know, on Monday there was an article column in the editorial page of the Rocky Mountain News. I think her name was Ann Bloomer. She wrote a column about how the Constitution and civil liberties are going the way of fascism, and there's really not much hope. I mean, this was in the Rocky Mountain News, right?
I think maybe Robin Bloomer is her name. Okay, so I would think that conservatives would want to get rid of this regime also.
Exactly. You know, there's a point at which you get to moving toward an authoritarian state. It's like cancer. It metastasizes, and there's really it's a point of no return. And, you know, the reason for that is because it becomes compelling not only to keep quiet about it, but to support it, because otherwise you'll be persecuted in some way, either at the job or, you know, through arrests and detention.
Well, wait a minute. I just got an email from Tom. Tom says, holy cow, the stock market will close at 10,000 today thanks to that louse Bush. Probably will be around 15,000 by the time he is through. What a bum. Ask your economist about that. All right, we will.
Also, you know, when Reagan was elected in 1980, there was only 16 billionaires. Now there's 290-some billionaires. There's over 16 times as many millionaires. And all of this is reported in Business Week magazine, and anyone can read it.
During the Clinton administration, there was a huge explosion of wealth, an enormous explosion of wealth, unprecedented explosion of wealth.
And, you know, companies like Walmart, for instance, they're now the nation's number one grocer. Just in groceries, they're number one. And they're applying for an exemption from antitrust laws to get into the banking industry so they can borrow the money at near 0% so they can open as many Walmarts as they want to. And all of this benefits the very wealthy. I mean, the Waltons put together hold much more wealth than even Bill Gates. So it just seems to me that it's time for people to wake up. We really do need balance in this country. And
all right, but what is it going to take? You're awakened. A lot of people are awakened, but many people are asleep at the wheel. You just heard a description of somebody whose friend thought he was a Democrat. He actually voted green in the next election. He's thrilled because Bush has gone into Iraq. He thinks it turns Iraq into a target for terrorists, will keep them away from our shores. He thinks Bush is the best thing in the world for the economy. So how do you bestir those people is really, I think, the fundamental issue. Bob, I thank you for the call. 303-321-1150. Eddie from Aurora. Hi, you're live with Enid.
Hello, Enid.
Hi, Eddie.
I just love your show because I almost hope that the Democrats make commercials along the lines of what you're talking about, because it's just going to make for a Republican victory, if I could.
Yeah.
First of all, you talk about rescinding tax cuts. Translation: raise taxes. I think that's a wonderful point. I think the Democrats should go for it.
The tax cuts were irresponsible, so they should have just left it alone. They wouldn't necessarily have to raise taxes, but Clinton, as Paul Krugman will point out, and he's pointed out in his book, Clinton did something very brave. He raised taxes, and it caused an explosion of wealth in this country. And I'm not saying that we should raise them, but we should not have cut them.
That is the translation to what you're saying.
No, it's different. There's a subtlety here that conservatives seem not to be able to grasp. I'm talking about restoring the cuts, not necessarily raising taxes. But the person you should talk to about this is Paul Krugman. He'll be on in the 2 o'clock hour, Eddie.
Well, again, I guess we'll agree to disagree on this one, but I think it's a wonderful plan for the Democrats. You can call it restore taxes. I think it'll be called something else. But the other thing.
But how can you live with these massive deficits? The worst in American history. You're going to have a banana republic here.
It's causing the economy to get back on track. It was exactly the right prescription for the economy.
Let's see what Krugman says. He says no about that. But let's see what he says.
Okay, can I talk about France for just a moment?
Yeah.
Do you, again, I think it'd be a wonderful Democratic plank to go out and solicit sympathy for France, given what they did during the Gulf War and what they did in the United Nations and what they've done since. I think, I encourage you, I think the Democrats should run on that. I think that would be a wonderful thing to do, because once again, you'll find yourself out of touch with the vast majority of Americans.
So I take it you're gonna vote for Bush, even though he's destroying the country systematically, lining the pockets of his wealthiest cronies and eroding your civil liberties.
Do you really think we should allow France to gain contracts based on what they get.
We're going to need, as the quagmire deepens in Iraq, we're going to need our allies to help us out diplomatically and by alienating them, which we did in the beginning, which is one reason we flipped them off long before we were going to Iraq. That's one reason they didn't want to sign on. And they foresaw what a quagmire we were going to get into, and we're there. We are in quagmire land.
The French were supporting Iraq before the war with the illegal weapon purchases. They were doing nothing. Everything they were doing was for oil for their own country, and they were trying to sabotage the United Nations up to the very 11th hour, feeding Saddam information. And if you think we should allow that country to have trade, again,
how about Canada, who's already put in $190 million? What about Canada? They've contributed $190 million to the effort in Iraq.
I'm talking about France.
I'm asking you about Canada. What about Canada?
Actually, in terms of what, I do think it was a mistake to take the
Ah, okay. All right. You can never have a bottle of French wine again. No Dom Perignon this New Year's Eve for you, Eddie. That's it. 303-382-1150. I'm Enid Goldstein. Cristal, actually. I'm Enid Goldstein. You're listening to the Thursday edition of Enid Live on AM 1150 KNRC. 1:38. Time to check into the KNRC newsroom for an update from Tim McLaughlin. Hi, Tim.
Hi, Enid. Good afternoon. Mostly cloudy. 32 degrees. I'm Tim McLaughlin. This report brought to you by the Denver Rescue Mission. A homeless man froze to death last night in Civic Center Park. The man had only one blanket to protect him from the temperatures, which dropped to the single digits. The Colorado Coalition for the Homeless is urging the city to use the lobby of the Human Services Building at 13th and Federal as a temporary shelter for the homeless. A preliminary hearing is set to take place in L.A. today for the man who allegedly offered to kill the 19-year-old Colorado woman who was accused Kobe Bryant of rape. Patrick Graber was arrested following a sting operation in which he reportedly agreed to carry out an attack on Bryant's accuser for $1 million. A football player from Legacy High School is now facing charges in the street racing accident that caused the death of a fellow football player. 18-year-old Matthew Aaron Jones was officially charged with careless driving, resulting in death, which is a misdemeanor. 17-year-old Jimmy Griffin of Broomfield was badly injured in the October 9th crash and then died days later. In sports, the Colorado Avalanche are north of the border tonight in Vancouver to take on the Canucks. Avs and Canucks each have 36 points in the race to capture the division title. The Denver Rescue Mission, serving the poor and needy for over 110 years. Donate your car to the Denver Rescue Mission and support a program that cares for the less fortunate while enjoying great tax benefits. Call Rachel at 303-297-1815. Traffic and your exclusive Weather Channel forecast are up next. KNRC News Time is 1:39.
Needless to say, I was anxious to be 110 miles offshore and jumping off a boat in the open ocean.
Jim Ray is a marine biologist who has been working with a national marine sanctuary called the Flower Gardens, deep in the Gulf of Mexico.
The Flower Garden banks are a very unique set of reefs. About 55% of the surface area is covered with living coral.
And while his work is not surprising, what might be is who he works for. Shell.
Just gives me a very different view and approach on the environment. Yeah, it has become an old friend.
Protecting this magnificent area is something people like Jim have been doing for over 30 years.
With this kind of protection, it'll probably be there 100 years from now for people to still enjoy.
And while Shell will continue to focus on energy, that will never be its only focus.
As long as I'm still allowed to dive, I'm not too old to climb back on a boat, I'll probably have the opportunity to go back to places like the Flower Gardens.
To find out more, see the Shell report at www.shell.com.
KNRC News Time is 1:40. Time to check with Darren Copeland in the KNRC Traffic Center.
This traffic report is a service of tonight's Billy Graham telecast. And really looking good around the metro area right now. Speeds are on the high side. We got that stall out of the way, westbound I-70 on the ramp to Havana. So good news there. Everything else, though, really moving nicely. He's met with Bono, presidents, and popes, and now he wants to meet where you're at. Watch Billy Graham tonight at 7 p.m. on KMGH Channel 7. I'm Darren Copeland with your KNRC Traffic.
I'm Colleen Swales with a KNRC forecast from the Weather Channel. Mostly cloudy skies drifting in this afternoon with a high near 36. That's just about 10 degrees below average. Heading into tonight, mostly cloudy, a low of 15, and then a few morning flurries on Friday with some cloud cover. But by the afternoon, after lunchtime, turning partly cloudy with a high near 30. Good Saturday on tap, partly cloudy and breezy with a high around 40 degrees. For the Weather Channel, I'm Colleen Swales on AM 1150 KNRC.
It's mostly cloudy, 32 degrees. KNRC News Time is 1:41. I'm Tim McLaughlin. Our next news at 2 o'clock or when it breaks on AM 1150 KNRC.
What's all the buzz in the suburbs? Find out by subscribing to Buzz in the Burbs magazine. If you're looking for all the best places to eat, shop, travel, and have fun with the family, you'll find it in Buzz in the Burbs, the original lifestyle magazine for Denver suburbs. Buzz in the Burbs is a terrific resource with a wealth of information on fashion, food, home, travel, health, education, local events, personalities, and more. Best of all, you can get the buzz delivered right to your door. If you're not on the mailing list, call Buzz in the Burbs at 303-689-7665 or visit www.buzzintheburbs.com now to subscribe. For just over $1 a month, you get all the buzz about your suburban community right in your mailbox every month. 40,000 active, affluent families rely on Buzz in the Burbs for great ideas on family living. For advertising information or to subscribe, call 303-689-7665 or check out the buzz on the web at www.buzzintheburbs.com. Call 303-689-7665 today.
KNRC Market Watch.
Stocks are showing big gains right now. In fact, we've retaken the 10,000 level on the Dow for the second time this week. Too early to tell if it'll hold, but the industrial average is up 100 points at the moment. Exact level is 10,022. NASDAQ is up 41 points, more than 2%. The S&P 500 is ahead by 14 points. The Treasury's 10-year note closing up today nearly 1 point for a yield of 4.24%. Markets jumped to new highs for the day less than an hour ago after the Federal Reserve released minutes from its October meeting when policymakers said they expected inflation to remain tame for, quote, the next year or two. Investors assume that means interest rates will also remain low and thus the rally. Home Depot remains the biggest driver on the Dow thanks to a couple of reasons. Company announcing plans to buy back $1 billion worth of its own stock, and the National Association of Realtors predicting an increase in remodeling activity next year. I'm Joe Matthew from the newsroom at MarketWatch.com.
Our contact number, 303-382-1150. We hear you. 303-382-1150. Close as your phone. 303-382-1150. KNRC.
1:44 on the Thursday edition of Enid Live. I'm yours until 3 o'clock, and I'm getting a bunch of emails. And if you want to email me, it's easy to do at enid@knrcradio.com. Also, if you want to listen on the web, easy to do, knrcradio.com. And if depending on where you are, you might, it might even be a better, you might get better reception that way. Eric emails, ask Fast Eddie, who was supporting the Taliban prior to 9/11. Okay, well, Fast Eddie's gone. And I got this email from, let's see if I can find it again. Somebody whose friend is a, oh, here it is. Hello, Enid. I'm a Democrat, and I just tuned in today. I hear all the problems about Bush, but the questions I have, did all these problems begin occurring January 2001? I mean, we did have a huge surplus, which Bush is just completely pissed away. Did these problems begin January 2001? And in the Democratic debate on Tuesday, I heard numerous complaints about Bush, but no answers. I want solutions, not just complaining. If Joe Lieberman is not the candidate, well, if you listen to the Borowitz report, his wife has already endorsed Dean. If Joe Lieberman is not the candidate, writes this Democrat, I'm going to vote for Bush. Oh, Kevin, don't do it. You, anybody but Bush, really, honestly. 303-382-1150. Brian, on a cell. Hi, you're live with Enid. Brian.
Yeah, hi.
Hi.
I have a question about the tax cuts you were just talking about before.
Yes.
You were mentioning how Bush's cabinet members are going to get this huge tax cut because of the dividends, and I've read articles.
Their average savings because of the cuts in their capital gains and dividends taxes is going to be $42,000. And Cheney stands to make $116,000 or $117,000.
That's how much
he's going to save in taxes each year.
Well, here's my question. I've read things that have said 95% of the taxes are paid by the 5% richest population. Is that right?
The person to talk to about this will be Paul Krugman, because you're hearing things on both sides. But tell me what your point is, because
my point is the
administration was highly deceptive when they said that the tax cuts would benefit middle-class Americans. In fact, they're not benefiting most middle-class Americans.
That's where my question is if 5% of the population is paying 95% of the taxes, and there's a general tax cut, those people who are paying that 95% of the taxes are by default going to get a bigger tax cut dollar-wise.
But then what about the wisdom?
They're going to get a $27,000 a year savings.
Krugman is going to, I think he's going to dispute that, but I will ask him that question. Let's frame it. The question for Krugman is, if 95% of people pay, or people, what was the statistic?
If the top 5% wage earners in the country are paying 95% of the taxes, then when there is a tax cut, they are by default going to get a bigger dollar tax cut than someone who's paying.
But it wasn't sold that way. If that's true, and I don't think it is. I don't think you're right about this, but we will ask Paul Krugman, who is the expert. It was not sold that way. It wasn't sold that the richest Americans are going to get the tax cut. It was sold that middle Americans and poor Americans were going to benefit, and they are not benefiting.
The argument that I keep hearing is that the majority of the tax cuts are going to the rich. And dollar-wise, that's absolutely the case, but that's because they're giving.
But look at the other part. You're not looking, Brian, at the other part of that. The other part of that is it puts us in huge, horrendous deficits for a long, long time and threatens really the stability of the country as we're doing this profligate spending. Here we are. We're in the middle of a war that's taking a lot of our resources, a time when you would not want to offer tax cuts. And here we are plunged into horrendous deficits. The surplus that we had, that Bush had going into his administration, has long since dissipated. And Krugman feels that we are on the verge of becoming a banana republic, or that this will send us off in that direction. So that's the thing I think we need to talk to him about as well. 303-382-1150. Patrick on a cell. Hi, you're live with Enid.
Good morning. Good afternoon, Enid. You were giving a list of things that President Bush had done. Who were the two people that were executed?
I don't have their names.
Well, one was Tim McVeigh.
And? Right? Okay. And?
And if anybody deserved to be killed, I don't think you'd get many votes against that happening.
Well, I'm not with you on the death penalty, Patrick, I'm afraid, even for a guy like Timothy McVeigh.
Because I
think it's too good for him. I think it's too easy, and I don't know why they alcohol you before they give you that fatal injection. They don't want cooties to get in. What's the story here? They're about to off you.
They could use a rusty needle. The other thing is, you mentioned the Medicare.
And I'm going to tell you why I'm against the death penalty. I'm against the death penalty because just the other day they pulled somebody off a death row who'd been there for 20 years in Pennsylvania because the DNA cleared him. So there's a lot of that going on.
But Timothy McVeigh, he was guilty, period.
Let him take his lumps in prison. I think it would have been a far more just punishment than simply to execute him.
The other thing is, you mentioned, was the Medicaid thing?
Yeah, very bad.
Bush voted for that, and I think it's a terrible thing, too. But my favorite congressman and your least favorite congressman voted against it.
Who?
He gets
a gold star for that one in my book. I think he's largely Tancredian, but once in a while, even a stop clock is wrong. Twice a day, as a matter of fact.
If he voted against it,
Patrick, then I would say good for him.
So why do you want aliens in the country that aren't legal?
Tom Ridge, why don't you take that up, Patrick, with Tom Ridge? Because our head of Homeland Security just gave a speech a couple of days ago in Miami where he says we've got to make undocumented illegals, we have to make them legal. So take it up with him. He's head of Homeland Security. 303-382-1150. And weren't you surprised when Tom Ridge came out for that? Because he's being a realist. Because, listen, we've got them here. They help our economy. They help us. They pay taxes. And very often, because they are illegal, they can't take anything out of the system. And it's just the way it is. We need them to harvest our crops. We probably need them to do the sewing of our clothing. A lot of people need them to be their nannies and housekeepers and gardeners and so on, work in restaurants, etc. At Walmart, cleaning crews, on and on and on. So you got to figure out a way to make this work for everybody. I'm Enid Goldstein, 303-382-1150, because you can't keep them out. You're listening to the Thursday edition of Enid Live, right here on AM 1150, KNRC.
One of America's greatest cities finally has a great talk radio station, AM 1150, KNRC.
Jim Conder here, talking with Bev Rouleau from International Optique. Bev, fashion eyewear, the best in the city, and now a sale. Bev, what's up with that?
Jim, International Optique is having our annual sale now through January 15th, and it's a blowout.
I know the details. If you purchase prescription frames and lenses at International Optique at Tamarack Square or International Optique at University and Orchard, you receive a 25% discount.
It's a family affair at International Optique. Just bring your family and friends. Everyone receives 25% off their new frame and lenses.
And don't forget to use your Flex dollars while saving money. If you run out of time to use your Flex dollars, come in for a gift certificate to be used later.
Jim, the excitement about International Optique is that we carry frames with a little attitude or a lot of attitude. Either way, let our staff make sure you walk out looking beyond fabulous.
For the best in eyewear in Denver, join International Optique at Tamarack Square or International Optique at University and Orchard now through January 15th for their spectacular 25% off prescription frame and lens sale. It's not what you know, it's who you know, and we know International Optique.
KNRC Community Commitment.
Arts and crafts abound at the Arvada Center's 17th Annual Art Market Show and Sale, now through December 14th. The Art Market features the work of more than 160 talented artists in a variety of mediums, including ceramics, glass, furniture, sculpture, painting, and photography. Admission is free, and prices for pieces in the art show start at just $10. For information on the Arvada Center's Art Market, call the Arvada Center box office at 720-898-7200.
Bonnie Bray Flowers has the perfect holiday centerpiece for hostess gifts and entertaining. Think Bonnie Bray for all your floral needs. Order now. Avoid the last-minute rush. Call 303-744-1091.
Celebrate the holidays by giving toys to seriously ill children. Donate a new unwrapped toy at your local Starbucks between now and December 25th. And for ideas, stop by Kazoo & Company in Cherry Creek. They're donating 10% off the price of all toys purchased for the Holiday Angel Toy Drive to the Starlight Children's Foundation. Just mention to the cashier you're donating the toy to the Starbucks Starlight Toy Drive. So bring a new unwrapped toy to your local Starbucks store and help brighten the smile of a seriously ill child this holiday season.
Hi, this is Bill O'Reilly. Join me live every weekday morning from 10 till noon here on AM 1150 KNRC. Now back to Enid Goldstein.
153 on the Thursday edition of Enid Live. I am yours until 3 o'clock. And again, let me remind you, Paul Krugman, economist, PhD, teaches at Princeton, also columnist for the New York Times, will be joining us, if all goes well, in the next hour. His new book is called The Great Unraveling, Losing Our Way in the New Century. And he talked about, you know, as he became a columnist, he never really thought that he was going to be taking on Bush this way. This just occurred when he began to see what was going on. And I think in the beginning, I had the sense that in some ways he really couldn't quite believe his eyes. And then he began to see what was happening. And then he just shifted into overdrive. One of the very few people who's willing to take on this administration. And he has the credentials to do it, too. I don't know how you reach. You've got to see the MoveOn.org ad, the Christmas Santa. Wow, that's beautifully done. That is a terrific ad. So if you have seen it, I'd love to hear your opinion. But we're talking about Howard Dean getting the endorsement from Al Gore. What that's going to do in the heartland, how much that's going to affect Howard Dean. Really, I think it putatively anoints him to be the Democratic candidate for president, the nomination most likely. I can't see anybody else catching up with him, but maybe things can happen and things could change. I mean, lots can happen between now and the election. I see right now, if you were to ask me, I think Bush could get reelected, and I'm sorry to say that. I don't know what it's going to take to wake people up, but this is an administration that on the whole is not good for them, not good for the country at all, and this is a really critical time. So you can tell me what you think will do it and what it's going to take to get people involved, more meetups. More connecting the dots of people so that people who are sitting alone at home thinking, well, what can I do to affect any change? Well, nothing at all. Well, go to some of these meetups. Even if it's not exactly the candidate, you'll meet other people and things can happen as a result of it. 303-382-1150. 303-382-1150. Phil Graham, a guy that we always love to hate. A plan by former U.S. Senator Phil Graham to bail out Texas Teachers Pension Fund is coming under a lot of scrutiny and criticism. Why? Well, it's called, in some places it's called carpenter's insurance, and in other places it's called peasant's insurance. And people don't really know about this. But there are businesses who will take out life insurance policies on their workers without their workers even knowing about it. Very often people at lower levels, carpenters, cleaning staff, and so on, but maybe even their executives too. When those people die, the corporation collects, and the people don't even know that the corporation has taken out a life insurance policy on them. So to bail out the teacher's pension fund in Texas, here's what former U.S. Senator Phil Graham and his wife, by the way, sat on the board of Enron, as I recall. He wants to, the plan is, well, it's called dead peasant policies, which have created, I don't know about legal nightmares, but definitely public relations nightmares. They want the state of Texas to buy life insurance policies and annuities on thousands of retired teachers and then cash in on them when the teachers conk out. That would close a $700 million funding gap. Now, I guess it must be legal. I don't know. But is it moral? Is it fair? You tell me. That they can take out a policy on your life, you're a retired teacher in Texas or some other state, let's say, and the minute you conk out, they collect on that policy and it will help close the funding gap. Now, I don't know what to say about this, except that it's, to me, repugnant. 303-382-1150. It's not the only place where it's happening. Businesses do this as well, and they don't tell you that they're taking out policies on your life. And, you know, what are they going to make you for Christmas? A cholesterol cake here, my dear? Have a little arsenic for dessert? I don't know. But the minute you conk out, they collect. And I've heard it called Carpenter's Insurance. The Wall Street Journal did a whole series on it. And in Texas, apparently, it is called dead peasant policies. Does this sound like a fair thing to you? 303-382-1150. And you have France. France is instituting a policy where they won't let you wear a headscarf if you're a Muslim. They're finding out that a lot of the rioting, that a lot of the anti-Semitic acts, that a lot of terrorism is fermenting in France because they have a huge Muslim population. A lot of these young men don't have all that much to do. And so what they are going to do is they are going to ban headscarves. You can't wear them if you're a Muslim and you're a woman, you can't wear a headscarf in schools. In France. And I don't know about public buildings, but you can't do it in schools. Now, could we ever get away with a policy like that here? I think Turkey would not allow. There was a woman who was elected to the Turkish parliament. She was a very devout Muslim. She wanted to wear her headscarf, and there was a huge hue and cry over it because Turkey has become more secular. They didn't want her to do it. They had a rule in place, and somehow it went into the courts, and I don't remember the resolution of it, but if someone does, let me know. 303-382-1150. But can you imagine in our country saying to Muslim women, you cannot wear a headscarf in classes? Not for one second would it fly. One more Enid, and one more hour of Enid coming up right here on AM 1150 KNRC. Paul Krugman, if all goes well, will be joining us in the next hour. His brand new book, The Great Unraveling, a collection of his columns, Losing Our Way in the New Century. Well, if you disagree, we want to hear from you, and if you agree, we want to hear from you. But I definitely want to hear from Paul Krugman. I'm a great fan of his work. And I want to find out what his observations are and how he can be instructive to you and me. I'm Enid Goldstein. You're listening to Enid Live on AM 1150 KNRC.
KNRC 1150.
Hear both sides talk. AM 1150 KNRC. Englewood, Denver. Enid Goldstein continues straight ahead. It's 2 o'clock.
Good afternoon. Mostly cloudy, 30 degrees. I'm Tim McLaughlin. This report brought to you by Melody Homes. It got very cold last night, down to the single digits, and that cold temperature caused the death of a 55-year-old homeless man who froze to death at Civic Center Park. The man had only one blanket to keep him warm. Denver is struggling with a lack of shelter space when the temperatures drop. The Colorado Coalition for the Homeless wants the city to open the lobby of the Human Services Building on Federal as a temporary shelter. Here's John Parvensky, president of the Colorado Coalition for the Homeless.
Clearly, we need to do something on an emergency basis to make sure that people don't freeze to death on the streets of Denver this winter. And the Human Services Building provides a great option to at least use the lobby space to house about 100 people who otherwise would be living on the streets.
The city has been debating whether or not to open the building as a temporary shelter, and with last night's death, the coalition has renewed its call to Mayor John Hickenlooper to immediately open the Human Services building. Governor Bill Owens announced the latest installment of the Heat is On campaign to stop drunk drivers. On December 19th, law enforcement agencies will begin a 16-day full-on crackdown on people who get behind the wheel after drinking too much. Owens says there will be a serious manpower effort aimed at curbing drunken driving.
Beginning on the night of December 19th, more than 1,300 officers from 73 agencies will be on the road working to protect us.
The governor says at a minimum, the penalty for DUI is a $500 fine. The man arrested for allegedly offering to kill the woman that claims L.A. Laker Kobe Bryant raped her is due for a preliminary hearing in Los Angeles today. Prosecutors say Patrick Graber was arrested following a sting operation in which he agreed to carry out an attack on Bryant's Colorado accuser for $1 million. Graber was arrested after picking up a bag that supposedly contained the money. He was booked on charges of solicitation to commit murder and his bail set at $1 million. Graber's attorney, Peter Connect, says that his client simply wrote fan mail offering to solve Bryant's problem. The federal government is purchasing additional flu vaccine as it takes steps to deal with what's described as the worst outbreak of the illness in years. Health and Human Services Secretary Tommy Thompson says 100,000 doses of adult vaccine have been purchased from European vaccine maker Aventis Pasteur.
We'll continue to look for other vaccines wherever possible. We're exploring all options for possibly purchasing, as you can well imagine, additional supplies.
Those supplies are in transit and expected to reach the U.S. by week's end. In addition, Thompson says another 150,000 doses of pediatric vaccine are also on the way. They should arrive in early January. CDC Director Dr. Julie Gerberding says that people need to take the flu very seriously this year. The White House is still willing to discuss its decision to exclude some countries from contracts to rebuild Iraq. White House Press Secretary Scott McClellan says circumstances can change if countries want to participate with coalition forces in Iraq. However, countries unwilling to join the coalition should not reap the benefits of Iraqi reconstruction when other nations have sacrificed for the Iraqi people.
The president was very clear earlier talking about how it was our men and women in the military who made sacrifices, it was the Iraqi people who made sacrifices, and it was coalition partners who made sacrifices. And it's perfectly appropriate for the U.S. taxpayer dollars to be going to those countries for the prime contracts.
McClellan named 63 countries that have been supportive of the Iraq war from the beginning. The list does not include Russia, Germany, France, or Canada, all vocal critics of the war. Meanwhile, a suicide car bombing in Iraq has claimed the life of an American soldier. U.S. military officials say 14 other U.S. troops were injured when the car exploded near a base west of Baghdad. Three people believed to be in the car were also killed. Lawyers defending accused D.C. area sniper Lee Boyd Malvo could rest their case today without calling Malvo to the stand. About half a dozen mental health experts have testified that they believe Malvo was insane at the time of the crimes and therefore wasn't responsible for them. The World Health Organization is warning that if current trends continue, global warming could claim about 300,000 lives each year within the next three decades. Health officials from the UN health body reported today that global warming caused 150,000 lives in the year 2000. Just in from New York, preliminary figures show that the Dow Jones Industrial Average has closed above the 10,000 mark. Price is still settling, though, on Wall Street. We'll have more on that. In sports, the Colorado Avalanche take on the Canucks in Vancouver tonight. The two teams, which haven't met this season, are each tied at 36 points in the quest for the division title. Melody Homes' total sales event is this weekend from 8 a.m. to 7 p.m. Visit any Melody Homes community and receive an amazing deal on a brand new home. Traffic and your exclusive Weather Channel forecast are up next. KNRC News Time is 2:05.
Hi, this is Doug Kellett, and I'm inviting you to get your holiday cheer from Golden Triangle Wine and Spirits, located at 12th and Broadway. Well, it's that time of the year with the holidays, and a lot's going on between now and the first of the year. And Brenda Francis from Golden Triangle Wine and Spirits is here with me now. Brenda, how are you?
I'm wonderful, Doug, and you?
I need your help. We got holiday parties, just any good time with friends. Help me out here.
Well, Doug, we pride ourselves on finding
inexpensive bottles of wine that will just knock your socks off. Any occasion that you have, in any price range, we can find the perfect bottle or case of wine. If you're entertaining, we can work with any budget so that all of your friends will be impressed with the wines that you serve at your party.
Golden Triangle is very tech savvy, too. They have a great website where you can view sales items and sign up for the weekly newsletter. Go to GoldenTriangleWines.com. And don't forget, you'll get a 10% discount off wines if you tell them you heard it right here on KNRC.
Golden Triangle Wine and Spirits, where variety, pricing, and convenience intersect at the corner of 12th and Broadway. Call 303-893-8437.
KNRC News Time is 2:06. Time to check with Darren Copeland in the KNRC Traffic Center.
This traffic report is brought to you by ESPN's Thursday Night Hockey. Getting a problem on I-25 in the Central Valley. Weren't able to quite pinpoint it, but it is an accident, so watch for some slowing in the immediate area. Everything else, though, is looking quite nice around the metro area. A little bit of slowing through the tech center. Watch ESPN's Thursday Night Hockey. NHL great Brett Hull leads the Detroit Red Wings against the Chicago Blackhawks exclusively on ESPN. Watch ESPN's Thursday Night Hockey beginning at 7. I'm Darren Copeland with your KNRC traffic.
I'm Colleen Swales with a KNRC forecast from the Weather Channel. Mostly cloudy skies drifting in this afternoon with a high near 36. That's just about 10 degrees below average. Heading into tonight, mostly cloudy, a low of 15, and then a few morning flurries on Friday with some cloud cover. But by the afternoon, after lunchtime, turning partly cloudy with a high near 30. Good Saturday on tap, partly cloudy and breezy with a high around 40 degrees. For the Weather Channel, I'm Colleen Swales on AM 1150 KNRC.
It's mostly cloudy, 30 degrees. KNRC News Time is 2:07. I'm Tim McLaughlin. Our next news at 2:35 or when it breaks on AM 1150 KNRC.
And now the Enid Goldstein Show continues on AM 1150 KNRC.
2:07, 7 minutes after 2 o'clock. Welcome to the Thursday edition of Enid Live. I'm yours until 3 o'clock. And it gives me great pleasure to introduce our next guest in this segment, Paul Krugman. He's a columnist for the New York Times. He teaches at Princeton. He's won a number of awards. He's an economist, a PhD. He's written a new book, The Great Unraveling, Losing Our Way in the New Century. Paul Krugman, thank you so much for joining us today.
Well, thanks for having me on.
I'm a great fan of your work, and you are one of the few mainstream, whether you want to call yourself, an op-ed columnist, a columnist, a journalist, who is willing to call the White House on what you see going on. You are relentless. You have a lot of courage to do it. Did you set out to do this, or did it sort of come upon you? What happened?
It came upon me. I was an economist writing a lot of papers that nobody can read for professional journals, doing a little dabbling in popular writing until 1999, and the New York Times came along and offered me a job writing for them, thinking it was 1999. The question was how far will the new economy go and so on. They thought I'd be writing about economics and business and not much about politics, and I signed on that basis. And then it became clear to me, a long time before I think it became clear to other people, but it was obvious to me pretty early on that we were dealing with some seriously dishonest and irresponsible people, first campaigning and then running the country. And so I found myself writing very controversial stuff. I've often thought to myself how much more pleasant my life would be right now if I had never gotten that call from the New York Times.
What's been the fallout from writing columns that have really put the administration's feet to the fire, called them liars when they were lying? What has been the fallout to you personally and professionally?
Well, professionally, it's okay because I've sort of paid my dues as an academic pretty seriously, and no one is challenging me on that. Personally, you get an amazing amount of hate mail. I develop a thick skin, but it's pretty awesome. And the constant sort of scandal mongering that goes on against anybody who criticizes these people. But actually, the main thing is simply that I have to write about this a couple times a week, and I feel like I have a responsibility. And instead of just sort of watching these terrible things happening to our country and saying, well, that's a terrible thing. Now I'm going to go back and cook dinner. I have to think to myself, what can I do? What can I do tonight to make it a little bit better than, or, you know, to slow this thing up.
Well, so but you could write this administration a thank you note because they have given you an immense amount of fodder here for your columns.
Yeah, my colleague Tom Friedman at the Times says it's a target-rich environment.
Yeah.
There is certainly never a shortage of things to write. I mean, I try not to have them all be about bad things that the Bush administration is doing, but there are certainly more bad things that they're doing than I have columns available to write.
Well, I have to say that you're somebody a lot of people look up. We look up to you because you have impeccable academic credentials. You're demonstrating courage, and I think when in the run-up to the war against Iraq, a lot of people, not certain how they felt about it, were looking to the columnists that they have trusted and read over the years. And almost everybody signed on to that war. And so they brought a lot of the population along with them, and you've been courageous by standing your ground. And I'm wondering, since this is an administration known for hardball, they're willing to out Joseph Wilson's wife, have they tried to undermine you in ways that you can identify?
Well, I don't know. There's nothing I can pin back on the administration. I mean, one thing you've got to say about this administration is it has a lot of people who are willing to be foot soldiers without necessarily receiving any orders from Karl Rove. So I don't think, you know, I wouldn't want to say that the administration has targeted me. The loyalists have. So, gosh, in my pre-New York Times career, I did a lot of business speaking and consulting. Among the companies I spoke for was Enron. Well, try to make the scandal out of that, even though it was, you know, entirely above board, and I always disclosed it whenever it came up. You just watch the machinations. But I have to say, look, realistically, nothing serious has happened. I think a lot of journalists do find it very intimidating. You write something critical of these guys, and you become the target of personal attacks.
Personal attacks, and also, if your beat is the White House, they'll shut you out, so you won't be able to effectively do your job.
That's right.
So you've got to walk that line somehow.
If your stock and trade is access, then you're in trouble, because to tell the truth is to end the possibility of your having a future access. And, you know, I don't think of myself as being particularly brave here. I think the trick is, first of all, the kinds of things I write about mostly, I don't need access. I don't actually want access. I just need numbers and statistics and analyses by, you know, I don't need insider sources. Also, I've got another job. You know, the Times fired me. I actually go back to a quiet academic life. I think it's a very difficult thing for a real career journalist. I'm just moonlighting.
My guest is Paul Krugman. If you're just joining us, his new book, The Great Unraveling, Losing Our Way in the New Century. Paul, I remember one of your columns, and I will often read your columns verbatim on the air here. So one of your columns, you talked about you were going to change your mortgage, and tell us why you did. And this was way in advance of what's happening right now. But tell us.
Yeah. Well, it was – all right. I changed from a floating rate to a fixed rate mortgage, which meant paying a higher interest rate, and also because the way these things work meant to increase monthly payments and a little bit tighter than I wanted to be. But I took a look and said, gee, we have this out of control budget deficit. It's just much bigger than anything we've had since the 1980s, and it's really there, you know, for a number of reasons it's worse than that one was. We have this huge trade deficit, which is covered by inflows of capital from other countries, which are not going to continue at this rate. And that means that as soon as there's some good sign that the economy is recovering, interest rates are going to go way up. And then if you go even a bit further out, I said, well, gee, the U.S. government is really, if I saw a third world country with this big an imbalance between the amount of money it takes in and the amount of money it pays out, I would have said that country was absolutely ripe for a fiscal crisis. We actually have, by the numbers, a worse fiscal situation than Argentina just before it went belly up in 2001. Now, you know, it doesn't, for various reasons, we're not going to hit that wall as quickly as they did, but just that, you know, all of this is not a situation where I really want to be owing money which is tied to the rate on the current rate on Treasury bills. So I said that, my view is that interest rates are going to go way up, and I'm putting my money where my mouth is by
have you done
I'm exposed to that personally.
Have you done the right thing so far? The interest rates.
Oh boy, have I ever? I mean, we just look at it and say, thank God we're not. You know, it's I'm not quite sure how much worse off we'd be with an adjustable rate mortgage, but if we were to try to make, we being me and my wife, if we were to try to make that transaction again now, we would be paying about 1.5 percentage points more than we did when we did the refinance. So, no, it's I think it's probably the best single financial decision I've ever made in my life.
Talk to us and tell us, because we're not, we are just baby economists. We're not even baby economists. Tell us why the tax cuts. I have had people call in. In fact, a number of people have called in who are not able to call with questions. And if you have one, 303-382-1150. Here is one person alleges that the top 5% pay 95% of the taxes, so therefore it's okay for them to get most of the tax to benefit from the tax cuts.
Okay.
Not taking into account that the administration really lied and said that this is a tax cut that would benefit middle class and people who work.
Okay, I mean first.
And talk about too the deficits and why we're in such. You've talked about how we're in danger of turning ourselves into a banana republic.
Yeah.
Would you tell me why?
All right. The first thing is, I mean, what really defines a banana republic, at least in terms of finances? It's when the promises that the government makes on spending and the amount of money it's able or willing to take in taxes are just fundamentally out of whack. And that's where we are. Right now, the U.S. government is collecting only about 75 cents in tax revenue for every dollar it spends. And that's actually understates the problem because the Social Security and Medicare, which are both retirement programs, are going to be facing much bigger demands next decade when the baby boomers retire. So the long run is even worse than that. And you say to yourself, okay, well, doesn't that mean we're spending too much? Then you ask, well, what major things is the public prepared to see cut from the budget? And you discover that the federal budget is overwhelmingly really just five things. It's defense, paying interest on the debt, Medicare, Social Security, and Medicaid, which is essential for so that poor people don't die of illness, and none of those is really available for large cuts. So we're basically deeply out of whack here. That mismatch between revenue and spending is again it's really third world levels. For the moment, it's not a crisis because the U.S. government can borrow, and the reason the U.S. government can borrow is that we've had 200 years of responsible fiscal management, and people say, well, you know, the bond market says, well, it's America. You know, they'll get their act together. And I get newsletters from investment companies that say, well, after the 2004 election, they're going to really, you know, get this thing together and have a combination of tax increases and spending cuts that bring the budget under control. I think they're fantasizing. I don't see any sign that the Bush administration has any intention of doing any of those things. So with this is bad stuff, and there comes a point. I call it the Wile E. Coyote moment. After the, you know, mm-hmm. I don't know if people still know the classics, but in the Roadrunner cartoons, Wile E. Coyote always runs off a cliff, walks about five steps, then notices there's nothing under him.
Right.
And that's what's going to happen to the U.S. budget. At a certain point, the financial market's going to say, "Wait a second, this country, this government is never going to make a realistic reconciliation between taxes and spending." And at that point, all hell breaks loose, to put it technically.
What about this business about the top 5% pay 95% of the taxes? That's the conservative argument, and
yeah.
So therefore they're going to get the biggest amount of tax cuts, and it's just and it's fine that they do.
Yeah, but it isn't true. A lot of this, you know, I love the way you use if you throw in a word. So I want to use it in a different context. You know, if you say that this is a package of cheese food, it's not really a package of cheese. Here, with most of the numbers you see, it's nowhere close to that. But the number I've often heard is, well, the top 1% of taxpayers pay 35% of the taxes, and then you say, you know, that's not true. And they say, oh, I mean income taxes, which is true. But you know, the income tax isn't the only tax. It's actually when you take all of the taxes together, it's the top 1% pay around 20%. Because there are payroll taxes and sales taxes and so on. And then you say, well, okay, this top 1%, which pays about a fifth of taxes, is getting more than 40% of the 2001 tax cut. So even if you were trying to just do that calculation.
Why are they doing this other than to line the pockets of their friends and cronies? When we are putting out, spending a dollar and only bringing in 75 cents to pay for it, how can they justify this?
Well, I think that the inner circle of the administration is just, they're just thinking about what will keep their base, including their base of wealthy contributors, happy through the next election. And after that, they'll figure out what they do then. But I think that if you ask what the ideological base wants, they have this doctrine, their own name for it. They call it starve the beast, deprive the government of revenue so that it can't...
Led by the ever-friendly Grover Norquist.
That's right. Well, Norquist is... We love Norquist because he actually says in plain English what a lot of them are usually say more discreetly. But it really goes back, this has been doctrine since the Reagan administration and before, that what you do is you create, but budget deficits are good because budget deficits provide you with a rationale for slashing popular programs like Social Security and Medicare.
But wait a minute, they want to starve the beast, they want to starve government, and these are people who are getting their checks from the government every month or every 2 weeks or whenever they're getting their checks. They're essentially saying is we want to starve the country.
Well, except if you're making $1 million a year, the U.S. government is a pretty bad bargain for you. You get a little bit of Social Security, you get a little bit of Medicare, but you pay a lot of taxes, and so you say, you get public safety from the police, but hey, you can afford security guards.
But that's the narrow definition. That's the narrow definition of what have I gotten. I like what Warren Buffett has to say. He was against the repeal of the estate tax, and he was so grateful. He's so grateful for this country. It has made him so immensely rich that he feels that he needs to contribute.
Even if you're just thinking about business profits, a country with a decently educated, healthy workforce is a better place. But there's a lot of short-sighted thinking and a lot of just ideology out there. I keep on waiting for Wall Street to wake up to the fact that stocks do much better under Democratic administrations than Republican administrations.
Ooh, we like that.
It's historically true.
Wait a minute. I just got an email from a listener. Holy cow, the stock market will close above 10,000 today, yes, thanks to that louse Bush. Probably be about 15,000 by the time he's through in 2008. What a bum. Ask your economist about that. Okay, I'm asking.
The stock market is up the last few months. We've had a couple of good months in the economy.
Is this because, can they say this is because of the tax cuts finally kicking in?
Well, the tax cut's doing a little bit, but the alternative wasn't to do nothing. It was to do other policies that would have been a lot less. Here, I think the simple answer right now is Bush has yet to have one single month in which the economy added as many jobs as it did in an average month under Bill Clinton. Under Clinton, over a course of 8 years, on average, the economy added 225,000 jobs a month. Give me an extended period in which the Bush economy does anything close to that, and then we can talk about how great his policies are. We've lowered the bar here so that if we have a couple of months in which the economy doesn't actually lose jobs, and in which stocks are clawing back to levels that they were at a few years ago and nowhere near their peaks, then we're saying, great triumphant Bush policy. This is silly.
Some people are saying that this is the most dangerous presidency that anybody can remember. Do you agree with that?
Yeah. I mean, just flat out, yes.
Why?
First of all, it's just on the stuff I really know, fiscal policy and economic policy. It's just irresponsible in a way that we've never seen before. Environmental policy is just shocking, and foreign policy. I mean, this is...
You mean wanting to shut out France and Germany and Russia from the reconstruction effort and yet asking them to forgive Iraq's debts?
Well, and launching into a unilateral war without having thought through what if it doesn't go quite the way you expected. And the professional military people are among the most upset of what's happening. They're the ones who say, my God, we're destroying this army that we built up so carefully by overcommitting it in police work, which is not what it's supposed to be doing. This is wildly dangerous, irresponsible policy, leaving us a much weaker country.
And have you seen Seymour Hersh's piece in The New Yorker talking about the Israeli commandos?
Who are training?
Training what? What are they calling them? Not headhunter, manhunts. Manhunts.
Yeah,
special ops people on manhunts.
It There are moments when you just want to hide under the table. I have times when I wonder whether the country can be saved. It's as if they've taken everything that we've learned not to do over 40 years of tough experience and have decided to try it all over again.
Paul, I have to tell you from where I sit, you're getting a lot of emails and comment from people who read you. But here I am doing talk radio, and you can list the litany of the sins of the Bush administration, and many people will call you up to tell you why they are going to vote for Bush again in the next election. It's like there's this disconnect. People cannot, they're in love with this guy for reasons that I don't fully fathom, maybe because he endorses a program that they believe in. And it doesn't matter that our first responders happen to be in Iraq. If anything should happen to us in this country, should there be a terrorist attack, they are going to vote for Bush. It's like logic has nothing to do with it.
Well, a lot of it is September 11th. I mean, the people desperately wanted to believe that we had the right man in charge because we were all so scared, and they were very reluctant to let go of that. And a lot of it also is the propaganda machine. You just have to watch Fox News and see how it performs.
Right, and using fear to manipulate us.
Yeah. I have to say, I had this book, The Great Unraveling. We put it to bed. The last possible changes in the introduction were in April. And the introduction to the book is very tough. It's basically saying that we're facing a kind of soft coup against America as we know it. And the publisher was kind of nervous about it, and some of my friends were nervous, and they're saying, you know, you really are going out on a limb. It seemed very out there. Doesn't seem all that out there right now. There are a lot of people saying similar things. So if you measure things as the way they ought to be, then you despair about American public opinion. But if you look at how much saner we've gotten over the last 8 months or so, you can start to feel quite encouraged.
My guest is Paul Krugman. He's a columnist for the New York Times. His new book, The Great Unraveling, Losing Our Way in the New Century. Let's go to the phones and to Ed calling from Westminster. Ed, hi, you're live with Enid and Paul Krugman on AM 1150 KNRC.
Oh, hi, yeah. Well, I wanted to ask Paul if he'd read Michael Boskin's paper on the subject of tax-deferred accounts and future government receipts from those accounts.
I have read it.
$12 trillion.
There's a little story there, which was that the it's actually a little bit embarrassing. Boskin retracted the paper. Turned out there was a fundamental error in the calculations. So it's actually it's a very embarrassing thing because it was cover story in Business Week and so on. The paper never actually said what people thought it said in any case, but that's a longer story.
And Boskin was an economic advisor to
Boskin is a reputable economist at Stanford, was
right.
the chairman of Bush I's Council of Economic Advisors, put out a paper that people latched onto because it told them what they wanted to hear, that's all going to be all right. And there was a serious critiques that quickly found that it was not actually offering quite what it seemed to be offering, but it also turned out it was just a basic mistake. So it's a sad story, actually. I mean, I was wondering whether I would have to write a column about it because it was kind of a little bit of professional etiquette I didn't want to deal with. To my great joy, Business Page, the New York Times, wrote up the whole embarrassing story, sparing me the necessity.
Ed, thanks for the call. 303-382-1150. Hank, calling from Denver. Hi, you're live with Paul Krugman and Enid on AM 1150 KNRC.
Yeah, Paul, revenues increased under Ronald Reagan when he cut taxes. How do you explain that?
No, they didn't. I mean, you've got to be careful here. You know, if you use raw dollar numbers and you don't account for the growth in the economy and so on, but the truth was that revenues fell far short of what they would have been if he hadn't cut.
What happened?
With myths.
All right, we lost you there in that last sentence. Tell us that last sentence again, because somehow you got cut.
Yeah, no, I'm sorry. That was probably John Ashcroft. the point is that the myth that revenues rose after we cut taxes and that it was a great thing just isn't true. Now you have to bear in mind it's a growing economy, so things tend to grow, and we had a lot of inflation in the 1980s, so dollar totals tended to grow. But it just wasn't true that, in fact, the Reagan tax cuts did seriously aggravate the government budget deficit.
Thank you,
Paul.
Hank.
Another question I've got for
you.
Do you recognize that the recession began under Clinton administration?
Look, this is All right. The new revision says that there was a decline in output in the third quarter of 2000, followed by a rise in output in the fourth quarter. And so, the number, what we really mean is when did jobs start declining? The answer is March 2001. Now, that said, Bush didn't cause the recession. The recession was coming because we had a lot of excesses in the 90s, and we had another one of those Wile E. Coyote moments. And the bubble was going to burst, and we're going to have a recession. And I have no critique about how the Bush administration handled the economy in the first 9 months of 2001, which I don't think it had much impact on it one way or the other. I think they greatly mishandled what's happened since. That the policy mix has been all wrong for getting jobs created, and has been meanwhile burdened us with enormous debts. But this business about trying to it doesn't make a difference whether the economy turned down the official recession dating says it started in March. That is, it started about 4 weeks, 5 weeks, I guess, after Bush moved into the White House. No one would claim that he has responsibility for the onset of the recession.
All right, thanks for the call, Hank. 303-382-1150. Jeff in Denver. Hi, you're live with Paul Krugman and Enid on AM 1150 KNRC. The board is full, but I think there may be one line open. Somebody grab it. Go ahead.
Hi, Paul. A question I have is dealing with economic statistics and like where people are saying, well, the tax cut has done such and such. What about people refinancing their homes and getting more money from, of course, not paying as high a mortgage, and also people using their equity that they've had to stimulate the economy, and also about labor statistics not really dealing well with the people on strike in California, the grocery store strike?
All right. The mortgages. Mortgage refis were the biggest factor by far putting cash in people's pockets in this past year. Dwarfs the tax cuts. That's had a lot to do with the spurt in consumer spending in the third quarter of the year, and that's drying up actually. So, and we're all sort of waiting to see what happens as it dries up. Now the labor, the employment statistics, we try to keep track of that. When you get the new unemployment claims numbers from the Bureau of Labor Statistics, they actually also include an assessment of how much these things matter. And what we think is happening right now is that the strikes in California are making a small difference, but not a big one to this. The basic picture is that we're still kind of – we've got an economy that is growing quite fast by output measures, but is doing a pretty disappointing job of creating jobs. And that's not really at issue in the numbers. All of these things are economic statistics are all to some extent a kind of boring form of science fiction. But you do try to put the various statistics together, and you get an overall picture.
Jeff, I thank you for the call. I know you're on deadline, and so I'd love it if you could stay with us the whole hour, but apparently that's not possible.
I wish I could.
I wish you could. I hope you'll come.
My employer, the New York Times, would get kind of mad if I didn't get a column in today.
I want to ask you, first of all, is there anything that we can do as a society? What can we do other than get a regime change in Washington?
Well, I mean, I'm very in favor, just in general, of individuals getting politically active, which isn't necessarily just about elections, but it's about keeping politicians and leaders in general honest. A lot of what happens, a lot of the things, the outrages that go on, and there are outrages from both parties, both sides, come because no one is paying attention. No one is raising a fuss. And relatively, it's not a very hard thing to raise an issue. And I just think that being more involved, take a few minutes off the Michael Jackson case.
Focus on Lacey.
Informing yourself about Medicare, and if you don't like the bill, then letting people in.
Medicare bill is a scandal.
It's awesome.
Does that mean that we're going to have any kind of, and apparently the administration is going to tackle Social Security next? Are we going to even have Medicare and Social Security when we need it?
I think when people understand what's in the Medicare bill, which may not happen until it actually kicks in 2006, there's going to be a firestorm. And I think the Social Security reform, they're going to, or whatever you want to call it, when they try, they're going to hit again the same problem, which is that doing what they want actually requires lots of additional money, which because of the budget deficit they don't have. So I don't know what will actually come out, but I think this is all part of that. I actually think that the Star of the Beast people are in the end going to be wrong, that they think that when they've created a crisis, the result will be that everyone will accept us going back to the McKinley era. And I think what's actually going to happen is that people are going to demand that we have another Franklin Roosevelt. But I hope I'm right.
I hope you're right, too. You're right a lot of the times, and you're a great pleasure to read and a treasure. Thank you for doing what you do. Paul Krugman, op-ed columnist for The New York Times. He is a doctorate in economics, teaches at Princeton. His new book, The Great Unraveling, Losing Our Way in the New Century. Thank you so much, Paul Krugman.
Thank you.
I'm Enid Goldstein. You're listening to AM 1150, KNRC. 2:35, time to check into the KNRC newsroom for an update from Tim McLaughlin. Hi, Tim.
Hi, Enid. Good afternoon. It's mostly cloudy, 30 degrees. I'm Tim McLaughlin. This report brought to you by Melody Holmes. Aurora police are asking for help in finding the suspect in the rape of a woman on November 6th. The woman met the man at the Stampede Bar on South Havana. Police have released surveillance photos from the Stampede, and they want anyone who may have seen the man to call police. He's described as a light-skinned black male, 6'5", muscular, with very bright and straight teeth. The Colorado Coalition for the Homeless has renewed its call to Denver Mayor John Hickenlooper to open the Human Services Building on Federal as a homeless shelter following the freezing death of a 55-year-old homeless man last night. The man, who was in Civic Center Park, had only one blanket to protect him from the single-digit temperatures last night. Patrick Graber, the man who is accused of offering to kill the Colorado woman who says Kobe Bryant raped her, is due for a preliminary hearing in Los Angeles today. Prosecutors say Graber was arrested in a sting operation in which he agreed to carry out an attack on Bryant's accuser for $1 million. In sports, the Colorado Avalanche meet the Canucks in Vancouver tonight. The Avs and Canucks haven't played each other since last season in February. Melody Homes' total sales event is this weekend from 8 a.m. to 7 p.m. Visit any Melody Homes community and receive an amazing deal on a brand new home. Traffic and your exclusive Weather Channel forecast are up next. KNRC News Time is 2:37.
Hi, I'm Enid Goldstein. Get up close and personal with the Colorado Symphony in the only concert hall in America where the music literally becomes the center of attraction. The CSO is offering KNRC listeners 20% off tickets in the Parquet and Mezzanine 1 sections of Betcher Concert Hall for all Masterworks and Super Pops performances. These seats put you practically in the middle of the orchestra. You can watch the conductor's every move and hear the majesty and force of the music build before you.
It's big, it's grand, it's fabulous family fun. Don't miss a Colorado Christmas this Thursday through Sunday, December 11th through 14th, with over 300 performers at Betcher Concert Hall. A Colorado Christmas will have you singing and dancing to your favorite holiday music. Tickets available at all King Supers, Ticket West outlets, and online at www.coloradosymphony.org.
And to get up close and personal with the CSO, call 303-893-4100. That's 303-893-4100.
KNRC News Time is 2:38. Time to go to Darren Copeland in the KNRC Traffic Center.
This traffic report is brought to you by a service of tonight's Billy Graham telecast. And really the only problem we have, southbound I-25 past Colorado is just about out of there, so watch for that. Everything else looking pretty good. He's met with Bono, presidents, and popes, and now he wants you to know where he wants to meet you where you're at. Watch Billy Graham tonight at 7 on KMGH Channel 7. I'm Darren Copeland with your KNRC traffic.
I'm Colleen Swales with a KNRC forecast from the Weather Channel. Clouds moving in, becoming mostly cloudy this afternoon, a high of 36. Mostly cloudy for tonight with a low of 15, and remaining mostly cloudy in the morning hours of Friday with possibly a flurry or two. But by the afternoon, it turns partly cloudy with a high near 30. And Saturday will be partly cloudy, although the winds will pick up with a high around 40. For the Weather Channel, I'm Colleen Swales on AM 1150 KNRC.
It's mostly cloudy, 30 degrees. KNRC News Time is 2:39. I'm Tim McLaughlin. Our next news at 3 o'clock or when it breaks on AM 1150 KNRC.
KNRC Market Watch.
Wall Street's major averages surged late in the day and finished in the green. The Dow Industrials topped the 10,000 mark for the first time since May of 2002, climbing 86 points to 10,008. The Nasdaq rose 38 points to 1942. The S&P 500 added 12 points to 1,071. Big board volume was about 1.4 billion shares. Advancers beat decliners by a more than 2-to-1 margin. The indexes got a boost today after the Fed released minutes from its October meeting, and they reinforced the tame inflation outlook for the next year or two. Now, that news sparked a rally in treasuries. The 10-year note jumped nearly a point, and the yield closed at 4.24%. Also helping the market, a better-than-expected report on retail sales last month. And Home Depot provided the Dow's biggest percentage push, climbing 4.5%, after saying it plans to buy back up to $1 billion in stock. I'm Steve Orr from the newsroom at MarketWatch.com.
Our contact number, 303-382-1150.
We hear you.
303-382-1150. Close is your phone. 303-382-1150. KNRC.
240 on the Thursday edition of Enid Live. I'm yours until 3 o'clock. If you're just tuning in, unfortunately, you've missed Paul Krugman, who is the columnist for the New York Times op-ed columnist. He's an economist, a PhD, teaches at Princeton, and his new book, The Great Unraveling, Losing Our Way in the New Century. But we're going to get that up. Joe is working on it right now. We're going to get that up on the website, and so we should have it in the next couple of days or so. The Paul Krugman interview, and I'm sorry we couldn't get to all of your calls. He was on deadline, and he's on vacation, so it was very kind of him to talk to us today. 303-382-1150. He's been off for a while, so I guess he's working on a column, a future column. Let's go right to the phones, and Gary calling from Denver. Hi, you're live with Enid.
Hi, Enid.
Hi, Gary. Sorry we couldn't get you on with Krugman. I apologize for that.
Yeah, I was hoping to talk to one of the last Keynesian economists left in the world, but I didn't know if I was going to ask him, actually, about he wrote an article right after 9/11 that he stated that he thought 9/11 would actually help the economy because it would create jobs. And I don't know if you've ever heard of the broken window fallacy.
No, tell us what it is.
It's basically if somebody breaks a window in a small little town, that'll create a job for a window fixer, and that actually helps the economy. And the fallacy is it doesn't help the economy because it's taking money. It's making unproductive money, because if it did create jobs, why don't we all just all go out and break a bunch of windows and it would help the economy? So do you understand the fallacy there?
Kind of, sort of. In other words, it's taking money that you could use for something else to fix something that just fell apart.
Right. You know, economics is taking scarce resources and using it for alternative uses. But if you use it for unproductive uses or wasteful uses like broken windows or the war in Iraq, you know, that's another example. But, wars never help economies, and neither did 9/11. And I'm just really...
But what, didn't World War II help the economy? It got us out of the Depression, it provided jobs and so on?
No, that's a complete fallacy, too. And matter of fact, if you go to Mises.org, which is a, I don't know if you ever heard of Ludwig von Mises. He was a famous economist, he's an Austrian school economist, and he's a lot different than Dr. Krugman. I'm just really surprised that somebody that still teaches economics today could make that mistake, because it's...
Are you an economist, Gary?
I'm not an economist. And you know what? But it's just, you know, I do understand basic economics, and sometimes I think some economists get too deep into macro and microeconomics, which I think Dr. Krugman does in most of his articles, and I think he overlooks basic economics things. And the reason I learned about this was I actually read about it on Mises.org about these guys, you know, explaining the fallacy, and it's very logical, and I think you understood it right when I told you.
Let me ask you a question, Gary.
Okay.
Who did you vote for in the last election?
Not George Bush, but I can't vote for a Democrat either, because, you know, I really vote Libertarian, because I believe they're truly for limited government. There's really no need for the welfare state. It's disastrous. It causes, there's no need for, you know, minimum wages. I mean, basic economics, if people understood economics a lot better, which I think is the ignorance of economics in America.
You think there's no need for Medicare and Social Security?
I certainly don't. I think that's disastrous.
Oh, boy, do I disagree with you. All right.
Well,
so who are you going to vote for? Who are you going to vote for in the next election?
Well, I won't vote for Bush. I'm sorry, and I won't vote. I can't see myself voting for Dean because he's more of a socialist. I mean, Democrats are more socialistic than.
You're making these blanket statements. In fact, the Republicans, who always had a reputation for fiscal responsibility, have been fiscally irresponsible in this administration.
I agree with you 100% that once the Republicans get in office and they get in power, that they turn just as socialistic, but it's just for their constituency versus, you know, the reason the Democrats don't like the Medicare bill, and I hate it, I agree with you there, is because it's not helping the people that they can buy votes from. You know, it's just ridiculous.
And it's not helping the people, too. There is some more generous impulse among Democrats, apparently, than there is among a lot of Republicans.
I'm just saying, if you understood economics, just basic economics a lot better, you would understand how Medicare, welfare, all these programs are so much worse for the poorest people.
Gary, you're not going to get me to agree with you. Poor people have to have that safety net of Social Security and Medicare. I mean, I think here we are, a rich country. Did you hear the news report? A homeless man died in Civic Center Park last night. A thin blanket was all he had, and he froze to death.
And you know what? I bet you can trace that back to government programs. A lot of people will not get the charity.
No, you can't. I don't think you can trace that back to government programs.
Let me explain one thing.
Quickly.
Okay, a lot of people don't even give to charities a lot as much these days because they think that they take for granted. They think the government takes care of all these things. The government can't take care
of
all
these things. Do you give to charities?
I give to charities a lot.
Okay, that's a good thing, Gary. I thank you for the call. 303-382-1150. I cannot agree with Gary that getting rid of Social Security or Medicare are good things. People need those as safety nets. Do you want to go back to a time when old people were immediately poor because they didn't have much in the way of pensions? And any of these corporations who you think you're going to get one set of pensions and health insurance and so on, and then, you know, you retire and suddenly your pension sort of vaporizes and the health insurance that you thought you were going to have, that kind of gets vaporized too because these corporations can rewrite a lot of stuff. And they do that. So a lot of seniors, you're seeing them now. Where are you seeing them? You're seeing them in the mall. First of all, their portfolios aren't worth what they were when they thought they could retire because of the economic problems in the country, a lousy economy. And secondly, a lot of them thought they were going to have pensions. A lot of these corporations have devalued the pensions or given them less than people thought they were going to have, and given them less in the way of benefits, health benefits and so forth than they thought they were going to have. So where are they now? They're working retail for minimum wage at a lot of malls, people who thought that they could have a comfortable retirement. They got a rude awakening, some of them. The Bush administration, backed by Republican-controlled Congress, has been promoting larger government at almost every turn. Now, isn't this interesting? Because it's always the Democrats who are supposed to be in favor of larger government. But in this case, it's the Bush administration. And the hugest addition to government has been the Department of Homeland Security. Tom Ridge surprised everybody the other night by addressing an audience in Miami and saying, we got to legalize illegals. Isn't that amazing? What would Tom Tancredo say? Anyway, the Bush administration, backed by the Republican-controlled Congress, has been promoting larger government at almost every turn, and yet starving it, not giving it, you know, cutting taxes, spending more than they are taking in. Its spending policies have been irresponsible, and its trade strategies have been destructive. The president has been quite willing to sell out the national interest for perceived political gain. And remember, a lot of the reporting you see about the Bush administration, that when they decide to sign on to certain programs, it's, that'll be good for our base. Never have you heard them say, or rarely have you heard them say, that this is going to be good for the country, because I don't think they think along those lines. Now, this is a conservative, and this is a guy whose name is Doug Bandow. He's written in the American Conservative, the conservative case against George W. Bush. And he's the one who says, the Bush administration, backed by the Republican-controlled Congress, has been promoting larger government at almost every turn. Its spending policies have been irresponsible, and its trade strategies have been destructive. The president has been quite willing to sell out the national interest for perceived political gain. And then he goes on to describe George W. Bush. He says, first, George W. Bush, despite laudable personal and family characteristics, is remarkably incurious and ill-read. Well, hello. George, Clyde from Englewood. Hi, you're live with Enan.
Hello.
Hi, George.
You don't have a very good line, it sounds like. Anyway,
we have a fine line. Maybe you don't. But
okay.
Tell me what's on your mind.
Kind of static-y. I'd like to. There was one guy who talked about revenues going up when Reagan reduced tax rates. I'd like him to realize that Reagan tried to compensate for it somewhat by raising other taxes, and I'm talking about the Social Security tax. He accelerated the rates that were set under Jimmy Carter. So it's true that he reduced income tax rates. If you, and like Paul Krugman said, if you account for inflation and the growth of the work labor force, they actually didn't go up very much. They actually went down a little bit. But he, but what he did effectively is get poorer people, lower income and middle class people, to help pay for that those marginal rate cuts.
Isn't that reprehensible?
People don't talk about it, and they really should talk about that. How Reagan, and because of the surplus of Social Security, we all, when we pay payroll taxes, we are running, we are paying for the everyday running of the government. So when they say that it's only people who pay taxes who should get the tax rate cuts, they're not taking that into account.
George,
go ahead.
No, I was just go ahead and finish the thought.
Well, that's it.
All right.
It was pretty sly of Ray. They say he's stupid, but actually it's pretty sly. Or the people around him were pretty sly.
George, I thank you for the call. 303-382-1150. I'm Enid Goldstein. You're listening to the Thursday edition of Enid Live on AM 1150 KNRC.
Denver's new conservative voice is on KNRC. Hear Doug Kellett, afternoons 3 to 6, exclusively on AM 1150 KNRC.
If you haven't heard the big news about dieting, listen closely. The experts are now saying that low-carb diet plans do work. But if the thought of eating nothing but meat sounds scary to you, continue to listen closely, because the next 30 seconds could change your life. Introducing UltraCarb. UltraCarb is the original carb-blocking, fat-burning supplement guaranteed to help you lose up to 20 pounds in the next month without exhausting workouts or life-changing diets. With UltraCarb, you can continue to eat the foods you love, pasta, pizza, and bread, and still lose weight. After blocking the carbs, UltraCarb works with your body's natural fat-burning mechanism to rid your body of unwanted pounds. Imagine looking in the mirror a month from now and seeing the thinner, happier you. And because UltraCarb is 100% guaranteed to work, you have nothing to lose except unwanted pounds. Call now to find out how you can receive a one-month supply free with your order.
Call now, 1-800-451-6432. That's 1-800-451-6432. Lose unwanted pounds 100% safe and guaranteed. 1-800-451-6432.
Wow, I can't believe it. 50 years. Hi, this is Keith Lair with my sister Linda asking you to come see Lair Fireplace and Patio for all your fireplace needs and help us celebrate our 50th year in business.
Lair's is truly a family business. With our brother Ken at our Arvada store at 81st and Sheridan, I'm at our Littleton store on South Broadway, just north of Arapaho Road, and Keith is at our original store in Denver at Holly and Evans.
When our father, Joe Lair, started in 1954, he had a very simple philosophy. Sell quality products and treat your customers fairly. You know what? It's worked for 50 years.
That's why we carry quality fireplaces and inserts from Avalon.
If you're building, remodeling, or converting an existing fireplace to gas, check out the superior construction and efficiency of Avalon.
You know, the fireplace is the focal point of most rooms, so do it right. Don't skimp. Get an Avalon. Our expert installers can give you a free estimate right in your home.
That's Lair Fireplace and Patio, Denver's most trusted fireplace specialist for 50 years.
Tune in Saturday morning from 10 a.m. till noon for Style Matters, sponsored locally by Aspen Grove, where life meets style. Style Matters is a weekly discussion of the Denver lifestyle as it relates to fashion and style. Hosted by Judy Schwartz and Evelyn Ehrman of the Style Matters column of the Rocky Mountain News, you'll hear lively discussion regarding fashion, style, local shopping, and more. That's Style Matters, Saturday morning from 10 till noon on 1150 KNRC. Sponsored by Aspen Grove, shopping Colorado style. The KNRC Community Commitments.
The Evergreen Chamber Orchestra will present its December Chamber Music Recital Sunday, December 14th at 3 o'clock in a mountain area home. Members of the orchestra will perform solos and in small ensembles, followed by a reception. Tickets are only $12 for adults, $10 for seniors, and $7 for students. And if you want more information and reservations for the Evergreen Orchestra's December Chamber Music Recital, call 303-670-6558.
Do you want out of high car payments? Then the John Elway showrooms want to swap cars with you. You could end up making lower payments than you have now. Swap cars and let John Elway take your old car and lower your monthly payments.
Hi, I'm Dom
Dominic Brasha.
And I'm Bill Thorpe.
Join us weeknights from 6 to 9 here on AM 1150 KNRC.
Now back to Enid Goldstein.
2:54 on the Thursday edition of Enid Live. I'm yours for about six more minutes till 3 o'clock, and then Doug Kellett takes over. And I want to again remind you, if you missed the Paul Krugman interview, it will be up on our website. And I also want to alert you to the fact that one of the interviews up on our website, Ann Garrels, who reports for NPR, and she was in Baghdad not as an embedded journalist, but on her own. And she really travels light. A lot of her friends were afraid for her safety. She made it through. She wrote a book about it. And we had her on as a guest. That interview is also archived, but I bring it up because she gave us wonderful insights about what's going on in Iraq, and she just won one of the most prestigious awards in journalism, the Alfred I. DuPont Columbia University Award for Broadcast Journalism, considered to be among the most prestigious, and her report about an Iraqi teenager who thrust a container of human remains at reporters did win. So she was cited for 250 hours of war coverage, apparently, or National Public Radio was cited for 250 hours of war coverage, including her very stunning, kind of shocking report. So Ann Garrels, we're getting wonderful guests. I hope you appreciate that. Some of them are in town, and we're able to have them live in the studio. Others of them join us by phone. But we are really getting, I think, first-class guests. And if you have suggestions as to guests that you would like to see on further segments of Enid Live, I'm always open to those. I want to let you know that tomorrow we're going to be doing the show live from the Denver Press Club. We do those shows once a month. The theme of this month's show is holiday. It's the holiday edition of our Press Club shows, and you're always invited to come on down and join us. We're going to have the Style Twins, Evelinda Ehrman and Judy Schwartz, are going to join us. We're also going to be joined by Suzanne Brown, who is the style editor for the Denver Post, Mark Schulgold, who is the Rocky Mountain news critic on Nutcracked and the Nutcracker, and Santa Land Diaries, Greg Kulig from the Bug Theater, His and Hers Holidays, what you can get for people, how much are you going to tip them, you know, all kinds of stuff that you're going to need for the holidays. Marty Midas is going to join us from the Rocky. She's a food critic, and holiday cooking and all kinds of stuff. So we're going to be up to no good tomorrow as usual, up to our usual mischief. You can join us. And I hope you'll come by the Press Club on December the 18th. Put it on your calendar. I'm going to be the featured speaker at a Press Club breakfast. It is December 18th, which is, what is that date? I had it somewhere here. Thursday, maybe? Does that sound about right? Thursday the 18th at 9 o'clock in the morning. Oh, my God, it's so early. oh, I hope I'm awake, and how can we tell the difference anyway? Bruce Goldberg is going to be interviewing. He's a moderator, and Channel 8 will be taping it for TV broadcast, I guess, in January. And it's $10 if you're a member of the Press Club and $12 if you're not. And I guess I'll be talking about my life and times and what it's like to be a talk host, or say it fast, tacos. Never mind. I guess I am your Taco Bell. I can't tell for sure. And what we have been talking about, if you're just tuning in, you've missed most of it. But we've been talking about the Dean nomination. John Kerry has just come out to say that it was wrong that Dean was endorsed. I mean, he's dead meat. Somebody compared him to, someone ought to stuff him. He's a member of the taxidermist art. I mean, he had so much promise. He's accomplished so much. It's interesting. How come his campaign didn't catch fire? And how come Dean's did? How do you explain that? How do you explain that Bush has been one of the worst presidents ever, and yet he really almost may very well get reelected next time? How do you explain that? These things are beyond me. Logic simply doesn't cover it. It's like marrying somebody. It's all emotional, I think. And Kerry had everything going for him, including an extremely rich wife, and he's a Brahmin, and he's decorated, and he's made the right decisions in his Senate career, except for signing on for this dopey war in Iraq. But he's had a very distinguished career, everybody agrees, and yet he's dead meat. Why? Maybe you can answer that question for me. I can't answer it. Next week, we're going to be joined by Sheila Lukens. You may have loved her Silver Palette cookbook. She got a brand new one out, and Wednesday, write it on your calendar. Tell it to Tim. He's a brave man. He's our CEO, Tim Brown, coming in on Wednesday in the 1 o'clock hour. To anything you have to say about KNRC, any of your comments, your criticisms, if you like the new lineup changes, if you don't, if you have suggestions, anything. He will be there to talk to you and listen to you and tell you what he's got on his mind as well. I have a lot of people to thank today. Joe Anderson, thank you very much for wonderful work. Thank you, Jordan Lyles, for the same, keeping us on the air, technical director, and so forth, et cetera, et cetera. Musical director, director of many activities. We'll do it again tomorrow, shall we? Let's have lunch at the Press Club, noon to 3 on AM 1150 KNRC. Do something generous. Leave the world a better place than you found it. Doug Kellett up next, and then Dominic and Billy follow at 6 to 9. I'm Enid Goldstein. See you tomorrow at noon from the Press Club live.
Hear both sides talk. AM 1150 KNRC, Englewood, Denver. Doug Kellett is straight ahead. It's 3 o'clock.
Good afternoon, mostly cloudy, 30 degrees. I'm Tim McLaughlin. This report brought to you by Sears. The attention to Denver's homelessness crisis intensified with the death of a man in Civic Center Park last night. The 55-year-old homeless man froze to death last night when the temperature dipped to 5 degrees. Not far away in City Hall, Mayor John Hickenlooper says the matter of finding any shelter space for the city's homeless was one of top priority.
What is obviously very regrettable is that, you know, we lost a citizen. That raises it to a new level, but I mean, it can't be raised to much higher a level because we were already treating it as, you know, I mean, you were here in Mayor Council. I couldn't have been more emphatic.
The city's Human Services building at 1300 Federal has been considered as a temporary shelter. Hickenlooper says it's too early to say whether it could be open to the homeless because of opposition from neighborhood residents. He added that the city is looking at other, better sites. A woman already facing criminal charges in Denver is now being taken to court by the state of Colorado. Attorney General Ken Salazar filed a lawsuit against Carlotta Wilson for violating the state's Consumer Protection Act. The lawsuit alleges that as president of the SSS9 organization, Wilson led consumers to believe she could help them gain access to $900 billion in grant money. The